can't hear anything. With
Rob Schoenman
and Maya Schoen coming to you today, Tuesday, August 19th, 2003, with a special WBAI Summer Fun Drive. Our special today is the hidden history of Zionism and the roadmap as a dead end for the Palestinian people. We're glad to be with you today, and all of you Hugh Hamilton Talkback listeners and those of you who are Taking Aim listeners who've tuned in early. We have a remarkable program for you today. It was a lecture that Ralph and I did at the College of Marin here in the San Francisco Bay Area. And one thing about Ralph in front of a live audience is you are not only moved with the provocative information, you are stimulated and inspired to action. And this lecture in particular brought many in the audience, and me too, who's heard much of this all of this information, in fact, over and over again, it brought me to tears. We hope you enjoyed the presentation today, appreciate it, and get to your phones right away. 212-209-2950. For $100, we're providing a gift to you as our thank you for your donation to WBAI, a 3-hour, 3-CD set. Now, this is a CD set complete with tracks so that you can listen to the sections that you are inspired by over and over again. It's a program we know you're going to want not only to have for yourself, but to have another copy to share with your friends, your family, and your colleagues throughout the world. It's the hidden history of Zionism and the roadmap as a dead end for the Palestinian people, combining both the provocative history, little spoken about, and the current situation for the struggle of the Palestinian people today. Ralph.
We want to emphasize as well that in delineating the nature of Zionism, we address head-on the question of the relationship of Zionism to anti-Semitism. As many of you are aware, any attempt on the part of people to understand the political and ideological character, the specific history of the colonial settler movement, which is Zionism, any attempt to do this and to document the terrible crimes of ethnic cleansing and perpetual subjugation inflicted on the people of Palestine, these efforts are stigmatized as being anti-Semitic. But the cruel irony about this is that the Zionist movement itself made a formal and frontal and perpetual alliance with the anti-Semitic regimes of Europe, and indeed opposed the resistance not only to anti-Semitism and to the persecution of Jews in Europe, but resistance to the Nazis themselves. It's part of the documentation of the hidden history. It's part of the armament we need to understand the particular character of this movement. It's part of the defense we require to oppose those who would dismiss our information and our efforts to mobilize.
Remember, 212-209-2950. We expect those phones to be off the hook. Now, if you have a portable phone, keep it next to you while you're listening so that you can get to the pledge line. We're going to play an extended segment first, but even while we're playing, we expect you to dial 212-209-2950. It's $100 contribution to WBAI, the only station in throughout the tri-state New York region that will bring you information such as the hidden history of Zionism and the roadmap as a dead end for the Palestinian people, where there is consistent discussion of the struggles of people throughout the world, here in the United States and abroad, struggles that are linked us together. Ralph?
Yes, and in discussing the hidden history of Zionism and the specific record of collusion with the persecutors of the Jews and the determined effort to remove the Palestinian people from history, we examine as well the way forward. We talk about the necessity for the de-Zionization of the state. We outline a plan of struggle and a programmatic answer to the crisis that faced the people of Palestine for the past 100 years and that afflict the settler population itself within occupied Palestine.
I hear the phones are already ringing. Remember, as we go to start the first CD, 212-209-2950. Keep those phones ringing. It's a three-hour program. We're on until 6 o'clock today, a very special program in order to bring you a portion of this three-hour lecture. Now, the lecture includes first the discussion of the hidden history of Zionism, then a discussion of the roadmap, and lastly, a dialogue between Ralph and myself and the audience with questions that you, answers to questions, responses to questions that you yourself might have asked had you been in this large audience here in the San Francisco Bay Area. 212-209-2950. And if Michael's ready, we can go to the first CD with the presentation of the four myths.
I am ready, and we hope that you are ready, those of you who are listening to this special edition of Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. As they said, the hidden history of Zionism, and we will be presenting this to you until 6 p.m. this evening when we will go to the WBAI Evening News. Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen have been a part of these airwaves over the past couple of years, and we are very, very happy to have them here and have them here with us at this time to make these presentations to you as they do every week on Taking Aim. But this is a special presentation this afternoon for these next 3 hours from 3 o'clock until 6 p.m.
At conference in 1991 to Oslo. Many of you are familiar with the Oslo Accords, but there have been many more accords since 1991 with Madrid. Gaza, Jericho, Camp David, the Saudi plan, and now with the roadmap. The game, however, has always been the same. The liquidation of the century-old Palestinian struggle for self-determination. The unspeakable suffering and subjugation of the Palestinian people that we witness unfolding today in the West Bank and Gaza. This suffering and subjugation are but the little continuation of how all of Palestine was colonized. It is a shocking history of armed displacement, massacre, and expulsion that dates back to the 19th century. Tonight, Ralph is going to elucidate on the hidden history of Zionism, and then I'll discuss the roadmap and what is unfolding in the West Bank.
Thank you, Maya. Thanks, Bonnie. Thanks, Lori. And thanks to all of you, brothers and sisters, comrades and friends, for coming here for a discussion of an issue that has consumed people and yet suffers from the absence of real concrete data and information pertaining to the nature of Zionism, its origins, its character ideologically, its role historically, and precisely the political process through which Zionism has assumed hegemony in the Middle East and to no small extent over the centers of imperial policy itself, notably since the events of 9/11. There have been four prevalent myths that have characterized our understanding of the nature of Zionism and of the Israeli state that is based upon it, and particularly in the United States and in Western Europe. The first myth pertains to the claim of a land without a people for a people without a land. The second myth is that of Israeli democracy. Virtually every newspaper and every television story and every reference to the Israeli state is prefaced by the claim that it is the only real democracy in the Middle East and so on. The third myth pertains to security as the motive force of Israeli foreign policy. Here you have a predatory a colonial settler operation which has sought to destabilize each Arab nation in the region and to entrap it and ensnare it in conflict, the better to usurp more territory, presenting itself in a defensive posture. And perhaps the fourth and most prevalent myth has been that of Zionism as the moral legatee of the victims of the Holocaust. And what is particularly savage in the irony that surrounds this claim is the fact that the Zionist movement and the Zionist leaders itself were the active collaborators with the perpetrators of the Holocaust. They participated in the suppression of Jewish resistance, and they organized a consistent opposition to any escape on the part of European Jewry. The objective of Zionism has never merely been to colonize Palestine in the manner in which the colonial powers colonize Africa and Asia and, yes, Latin America. In the latter instance, the objective was to obtain resources and cheap labor in the process of imposing a colonial and imperial hegemony. But what distinguishes Zionism from other colonial movements is the relationship between the settlers and the people to be conquered. Because the avowed purpose of the Zionist movement was not merely to exploit the Palestinian people, but to disperse and to dispossess them. The intent was to replace the indigenous population with a new settler community, to eradicate the farmers, the artisans, and the town dwellers of Palestine, and to substitute a workforce composed of a settler population. And in denying the existence of the Palestinian people, the Zionist movement sought to create the political conditions for their removal, not merely from their land, but from history. When acknowledged at all, the Palestinians have been reinvented as a semi-savage nomadic remnant. Historic records have been falsified, a procedure that began during the last quarter of the 19th century, but continues to this very day. The Zionist movement would seek, throughout its inception, alternative imperial sponsors for this bloody enterprise. In fact, if you look carefully at the progenitors of Zionism, the upper layers of the haute bourgeoisie in Europe, their basic approach was to treat anti-Semitism as something not only endemic and inevitable, but also of considerable value. They despaired of any alternative to the anti-Semitic climate of the imperial regimes in which they subsisted. And they advocated making common cause with the anti-Semites for the purpose of converting the Jews of Europe into settlers afar. Herzl approached the most anti-Semitic and retrograde regimes of the day. They approached Count von Plehve of the Tsar, the author of the great pogrom at Kishinev and of the Black Hundreds. And they approached them with the proposition that if they funded and armed a Zionist movement to colonize Palestine, the Zionist movement would undertake that task on behalf of Tsarist imperialism representing its commercial interests in the area. And the same pitch was made to the Kaiser, who for over a decade armed and supported and dallied with the Zionist movement. The same approach made to the French Imperium and, of course, to the British Raj. So from its inception, Zionism has seen as its task enlisting the imperial powers, and indeed the most retrograde and anti-Semitic of them, as the fundamental political economic sponsors of the colonial enterprise itself. And this project embraced as well the fascism of Mussolini. It was Mussolini who funded the Zionist youth movement, particularly Beitar, whose leader was Menachem Begin, who wore the black shirt and gave the fascist salute, which they changed to the brown shirt with the advent of Hitler and Nazism in Europe. And the Zionist movement did not miss a beat with the advent of Nazism in Europe. On the contrary, the local Zionist organization of Germany expressed its open support for the Nazi Party and enlisted the Nazi Party as its sponsors. And the labor Zionists would bring Eichmann to Palestine in the 1930s, Baron von Mildenstein of the SS for a period of 6 months, leading to a 12-part series in the publication of the SS called Der Angriff, which means the assault, praising Zionism, with Heydrich and Himmler overseeing the stamping of a coin with the swastika on one side and the Star of David on the other, culminating indeed in the moment when the Zionist movement of Shamir made a formal military pact with the Wehrmacht, discovered in the German embassy in Ankara at the end of the Second World War and known as the Ankara Document. So in understanding the particular political and ideological character of Zionism, both in relation to its victim people, the Palestinians, but notably in relation to the Jews themselves. We then come to comprehend the cruel irony of the ways in which the Zionist movement has wrapped itself in the collective shroud of the 6 million victims of the Holocaust, the better to visit upon itself a moral authority to impose on the Palestinian people a fate rather like that of the Jews in Europe. From its inception, every major spokesperson for the Zionist movement has set forth clearly what was intended in Palestine. It was nothing less than the systematic removal of the Palestinian people, their dispossession, and their elimination. In 1896, Theodor Herzl set forth his plan for inducing the Ottoman Empire to grant Palestine to the Zionist settler movement. If His Majesty the Sultan were to give us Palestine, we will undertake to regulate the finances of Turkey and form an outpost of civilization in opposition to barbarism, defending Turkish imperial and commercial interests in the region. Speaking at this Congress of the World Zionist Organization in 1905, the 7th World Zionist Congress, Max Nordau, a prominent Zionist leader, put forth before the Zionists themselves their concerns. There is a movement which has taken hold of a great part of the Arab people. It is taking a direction which will cause harm in Palestine. The Turkish government will feel itself compelled to defend its reign in Palestine and Syria with armed force. In these circumstances, we can persuade Turkey that they will require us to carry out their particular operations, a strong, well-organized, relentless military group which will suppress this population and eliminate it. The South African connection is a very old one. It does not merely encompass Prime Minister General Jan Smuts, who is a South African delegate to the British War Cabinet, pushed the British government to adopt the Balfour Declaration, making a commitment to construct a Zionist colony under British direction. The relationship between Zionism and the South African settlers had evolved much earlier because the settlers played a similar role in South Africa as they would in Palestine. N. Kirshner, the chairman of the South African Zionist Federation, provided a vivid account of the intimate interaction between the Zionists and South African leaders, the identification of Zionists like Weizmann and Herzl with the South African conception of a racially distinct colonizing population. As to Theodor Herzl, the founder of political Zionism, he expressed his fundamental commitment in his modeling of the Zionist program on that quintessential colonial ideologue, Sir Cecil Rhodes. As Herzl wrote about Rhodes, "There are differences between Cecil Rhodes and my humble self, all to my disfavor, to my very great personal disfavor. The objective ones are in favor of our Zionist movement. We will only accomplish the Zionist dispersal of the Palestinians by using the methods pioneered by Rhodes. The Jewish company will be modeled on the colonial chartered company of Rhodes, and it will be a great acquisition company that will carry out its task through military and commercial means. The poorest will first go to cultivate the soil. In accordance with a preconceived land plan, they will construct roads and bridges and railways and telegraphs and regulate rivers and build their own habitations and drive the indigenous population out." One of the ideological forebears of Zionism, Vladimir Jabotinsky, is known as the founder of revisionist Zionism, that Zionist current which had little patience with the liberal and socialist facade employed by labor Zionists. In 1923, Jabotinsky wrote The Iron Wall, which is a benchmark essay for the entire Zionist movement, in which he sets forth bluntly and clearly the premises of Zionism. They had indeed been laid out in the diaries of Theodor Herzl and in the political writings of Chaim Weizmann, if not as eloquently as the declaration of Jabotinsky, known as The Iron Wall. There can be no discussion of reconciliation between us and Palestinian Arabs, not now, not in the future. All well-meaning people, with the exception of those blind from birth, have understood long ago the complete and utter impossibility at arriving at agreements with the Arabs of Palestine for the transformation of Palestine from an Arab country to a country under utter control of Jews. Each of you has some general understanding of the history of colonization. Try to find even one example when the colonization of a country takes place with the agreement of the native population. Such an event has never occurred. The natives will always struggle obstinately against colonists, and it is all the same whether they are cultured or uncultured. The comrades in arms of Hernan Cortes and Francisco Pizarro conducted themselves like brigands. The Redskins fought with uncompromising fervor against both evil and so-called good-hearted colonizers. The natives will struggle against any form, any kind of colonization, anywhere and at any time, because it is inadmissible to them. Any native people views their country as their national home, of which they will be masters, and they will never voluntarily allow a new master who drives them out. So it is for the Arabs. Compromisers among us try to convince us that Palestinians are some kind of fools who can be tricked with hidden formulations of our basic goals. I flatly refuse to accede to this view of the Palestinian Arabs. They have the precise psychology that any oppressed people has. They look upon Palestine with the same instinctive love and true fervor that any Aztec look upon his Mexico or any Sioux upon his prairie. This people will struggle against colonizers until the last spark of hope that they can avoid the dangers of conquest and colonization is extinguished. Yes, the Palestinians will struggle in this way until we have removed the last spark of hope. It matters not what words we use to explain our colonization. Colonization has an integral, inescapable meaning. It is understood by every Jew and by every Arab. We have but one goal. It is in the nature of things. We shall carry on this colonization against the will of the Palestinian Arabs. That condition exists now. It will subsist in the future, and we will never relinquish it. And even an agreement with non-Palestinians represents the same kind of fantasy. For in order for genuine Arab nationalists of Baghdad and Mecca and Damascus to agree to pay so serious a price, they would have to abandon the Arab character of Palestine. For we shall not give compensation for Palestine neither to Palestinians or to other Arabs. A voluntary agreement is inconceivable. Let us be clear about that. Even the most restricted colonization would only be possible in defiance of the will of the native populace. Ours will continue to develop only under a shield of force, which comprises an iron wall through which this people will never break through. This is our Arab policy. To formulate it any other way is hypocrisy. Whether through the Balfour Declaration or the mandate, external force is the necessity for establishing in this country conditions of rule through which this people, regardless of its wishes, will be deprived of all possible physical and administrative means of impeding us. Force, relentless force, will play its role without indulgence. And in this, let us be clear, there is no meaningful difference between our militarists and our vegetarians. One prefers an iron wall of Jewish bayonets, the other an iron wall of English bayonets. And to the hackneyed reproach that this point of view is unethical, we say untrue. This is our ethic. There is no other ethic. As long as there remains the faintest spark of hope for Palestinians to impede us, they will not sell these hopes, not for any sweet words nor for any tasty moral, because this is not a rabble, but a people. A living people. And no people make such enormous concessions on such fateful questions of existence except when there is no hope left, until we have removed any remnant, every opening visible in the iron wall. The theme and imagery of coercive iron and steel evoked by Vladimir Jabotinsky was to be taken up by the nascent National Socialist movement in Germany, even as Jabotinsky had in turn been inspired by Benito Mussolini. The mystical invocation of iron will in the service of martial and chauvinist conquest united Zionist, colonial, and fascist ideologies, and it sought its legitimacy in legends of a conquering past. Cecil B. DeMille's Samson and Delilah, was more than a Hollywood biblical romance about the perfidy of woman and the virtue of manly strength. It carried as well the authoritarian values of the novel from which it was adopted, Vladimir Jabotinsky's Samson, which trumpeted the necessity of brute force of the Israelites who were to conquer the Philistines. "Shall I give our people a message from you?" Samson thought for a while and then said slowly, "The first word is iron. They must get iron. They must give everything they have for iron, their silver, their wheat, their oil, their wine, their flocks, their wives, their daughters, all for iron. Nothing in the world more valuable than iron." Jabotinsky, the siren of an iron wall through which this local population would never break through, and of the iron law of every colonizing movement, found his call echoed by every major Zionist spokesperson and utilized in every major Zionist foray against this victim people for decades to come. Israel's Minister of Defense Yitzhak Rabin, in 1967 as Chief of Staff, launched a war of elimination with what he called iron will. As Prime Minister in 1975 and 1976, he declared the policy of Hayad Barzel, the Iron Hand, in the West Bank. Over 300,000 Palestinians were to pass through Israeli prisons under conditions of sustained and institutionalized torture, exposed by the Sunday Times of London, denounced by Amnesty International. It became the subject of a book of Myers and mine called Prisoners of Israel after we had prepared a report at the request of the United Nations on the treatment of Palestinian prisoners in three jurisdictions. His successor, Chief of Staff Rafael Eitan, imposed the Iron Arm, Zoa Barzel, on the West Bank, and sustained assassination was added to the repressive arsenal. On July 17, 1982, the Israeli cabinet met to prepare what the Sunday Times in London termed this carefully pre-planned military operation to purge the camps, called Moer Barzel, or Iron Brain. The camps were Sabra and Shatila, and the operation, familiar to Sharon and Begin, was part of Sharon's larger plan discussed in detail in the Israeli cabinet. The colonization of Palestine has proceeded on this basis. The colonization of Palestine has been punctuated by periodic massacre from one end of that country to the other. It is the means through which Palestine was emptied of its population. Now, we should bear in mind that in 1947, there were now 600,000 settlers and 1.4 million Palestinian Arabs. At the time of the partitioning of Palestine over the heads of the Palestinian people in 1947, the settler population were 27% of the populace. The United Nations heard before the Select Committee on Palestine the testimony of Rabbi Fishman on behalf of the Jewish Agency. And Rabbi Fishman presented a map based upon the diaries of Theodor Herzl, page 711 of volume 2 of the Complete Diaries of Theodor Herzl, which declared that the area of Eretz Israel of the Jewish state stretched from the brook of Egypt to the Euphrates. And that map, which was presented to the United Nations as to what constituted Eretz Israel, included all of Palestine, all of Transjordan, Egypt up to the Nile, including Cairo, one-third of Arabia, two-thirds of Syria, 40% of Iraq, and the southern tier of Turkey, right indeed extending up to and encompassing Kuwait. Eretz Israel, 1947, formally presented on behalf of the Jewish Agency for Palestine before the United Nations Special Committee on Inquiry on July 9, 1947. They awarded the Zionist movement 55% of the most fertile land.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. We've been coming to you today for the WBAI Fund Drive with a very special program. If you've been listening, you've been hearing Ralph Schoenman in a presentation at the College of Marin, a remarkable, provocative, and moving lecture that Ralph and I did on the hidden history of Zionism and the roadmap as a dead end for the Palestinian people. It is our gift to you, a 3-CD, fully tracked compilation for a $100 donation to WBAI. The number to call is 212-209-2950. I'll repeat that again, 212-209-2950. WBAI appreciates MasterCard, Visa, debit card, checks, money order, any way you can. This is your opportunity not only to show your appreciation for WBAI and WBAI's presentation each week of Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. This is your opportunity to have this three CD set, not only for yourself, but think about getting it for your friends, your families, and your colleagues. Some of you may have read The Hidden History of Zionism or have heard our presentations over the past few years. But this is a very special one, as you have been hearing. The Hidden History of Zionism, $100, 212-209-2950. This is your only opportunity, and you're not going to want to miss it. Ralph?
What we are seeking to do is to provide the ammunition, the political capacity to argue the case, to demonstrate with facts and historical record the extraordinary brutality of the ethnic cleansing of the people of Palestine. Within 6 months, prior to the actual formation of the state, but within 6 months of the partitioning of Palestine, the Zionist militia, carrying out massacres from one end of Palestine to the other, seized 475 Palestinian towns and villages and razed to the ground, reducing to rubble 385 towns and villages, stripping the remainder of their land. And then, having now obtained by the most barbarous force possession of nearly 96% of the land of Palestine, the state imposed legislation based upon the Jewish National Fund, which required for entitlement to own land, to work on land, to lease it, to rent it, to live on it, proof of four generations of maternal Jewish descent.
Now,
that's the record, that's the reality, that's the character of this state. It's essential to understand that, and thereby to understand the necessity for its removal and replacement with a society based upon the right of people as citizens, not through ethnic affiliation or religious identification.
Now, one of the reasons to have this three CD set is that it is a program that is so dense, so packed with information, that you're going to have to listen and listen and listen again. That's what you're going to want to do. You become so absorbed. Now, I'd like to let you know what a few people have said about The Hidden History of Zionism. We first published this book in 1988, and today you have more and more people saying the very things we were writing about so many years ago, and many of the things that we wrote and said and that you're going to hear today have come to pass. We're laying out the history. As Rabbi Elmer Berger, who is the president of American Jewish Alternatives to Zionism, had written, he had said that the hidden history of Zionism is indispensable for anyone attempting to understand the current uprising of the Palestinian people. And by then he was referring to the First Intifada, and it's been an ongoing struggle before and afterwards. He continues, Ralph Schoenman's command of the facts and his coherent organization of them to reach irrefutable conclusions are a bonanza. Now remember, Rabbi Emma Berger is calling The Hidden History of Zionism, with its extensive documentation, a bonanza. And it's a bonanza that's available to you, this three CD set, $100 donation to keep WBAI broadcasting and vital on the airwaves, bringing programs such as Taking Aim to you each week, 212-209-2950. Many of you know this number by heart. We should be hearing the phones ringing. We have these wonderful volunteers in the premium room ready to talk to you, to hear your comments, and to take your donations. Aside from the $100 donation, there are memberships, and there are also more than $100 donations. Everything is appreciated to keep WBAI on the air. But our special gift to you is this, as Rabbi Emma Berger says, this bonanza, the 3-hour CD set. Ralph?
As we move forward in the struggle of the Palestinian people, it is transparent that the next stage is already being set with this charade of a roadmap plan, which is nothing more than the setting up of the Palestinians for the next stage of subjugation and expulsion, more relentlessly, more ruthlessly, and indeed under the cover of the wars already in preparation in the region, targeting Iran, targeting Syria, and beyond. Have no doubt about it. Imperialism is compelled and driven by its logic, by its crisis, by its declining rate of profit, by the resistance it is engendering to even more severe depredation. We need to arm ourselves, brothers and sisters. We must know this history. We must understand the way forward. That's what we seek out, to set out here.
Noted Palestinian scholars Hisham Sharabi and Muhammad Halaj also had extensive comments about the hidden history of Zionism. Muhammad Halaj, who is the editor of Palestine Perspectives and one of the foremost Palestinian scholars, said, quote, Ralph Shoenman shows how Zionism tormented the Palestinians and disfigured the Jews. The hidden history of Zionism comes as a timely and revealing document. It's as true today as it was then. And in this lecture, we bring up to date not only the history, but the unfolding of events taking place in the West Bank and Gaza and in pre-67 Israel itself. Let's listen to what Hisham Sharabi, the editor of the Journal of Palestine Studies and also the author of some of the most extensive documentation about the drive of the Zionists to remove the Palestinians. Hisham Sharabi said, Ralph Shoenman's The Hidden History of Zionism is a significant, forceful assessment of Zionism in theory and practice. That's Hisham Sharabi. So we have noted anti-Zionist scholars and rabbis such as Rabbi Elmer Berger, as well as the Palestinian scholars themselves, noting that the hidden history of Zionism, and in this form the 3-hour CD set, is something that is indispensable for each and every one of you. That's it's a $100 donation for WBAI, your station. Remember, this is a station for you, but of you. It is a listener-sponsored station that cannot exist without these contributions. 212-209-2950. MasterCard, Visa, debit card, checks, and money orders. Thank you. Ralph?
Yes. And indeed, as we talk further about the question of Palestine, and as you will hear the documentation through the segments of the 3-hour presentation, you will see a concrete examination of how the mobilization of the population inside Palestine and out can be undertaken, the link between that struggle and the resistance of the subject peoples of the Arab East, as the great Palestinian poet and Marxist analyst Rassan Kanafani had laid out, a delineation of the way forward, a way in which the Palestinian people may realize their fundamental aspiration for self-determination, the link between their struggle and our own, and the necessity for a movement of mobilization in the United States in support of that effort.
Remember, we can only play segments of this 3-hour presentation here today. Although we're on the air for 3 hours, we also need to speak to you directly to get you to your phones at 212-209-2950. Remember, it is the opportunity to have programs such as Taking Aim that is exceptional. WBAI is a one-of-a-kind station in the tri-state New York region. Pacifica forms the basis for community radio throughout the United States. Community radio, which we must always be on the defense to protect and to nourish with our contributions and our participation in the building of these stations, in the governance of these stations. 212-209-2950 for the 3-hour CD set, fully tracked so that you can listen to of various parts of it as chapters, as you would in reading a book. A three-hour CD set, thanks to the editing and the tracking done by Yara Mako of Guns and Butter, one of our sister programs on KPFA here in Berkeley. Russ?
What we have before us unfolding, as we've been discussing, is a plan for the completion of the ethnic cleansing of Palestine. One aspect of that project has to do with the plan for the fragmentation of each Arab state in its turn that was put forward in the late 1970s by Oded Yinon, a Mossad analyst, and who would publish it as a strategy for Israel in the 1980s, a program taken up by the neocon Likud-supporting cabal that is now at the center of imperial policy. And as that project, that Zionist project, Zionism so integrally linked to imperialist designs in the region of the Arab East, as that project proceeds, we see now that the Imperium itself has undertaken preemptive war, permanent war, and the methods of rule that have been required to subjugate the Palestinian people increasingly manifesting themselves in relation to our own. As Malcolm X once put it, chickens are coming home to roost. You cannot have murder squads patrolling the planet and think they will stop at your national frontiers. You cannot have ethnic cleansing and imperial subjugation of entire peoples proceeding at the expense of the American people through the tax monies that subsidized the Israeli state $100 billion in the past 45 years and think that the consequences of that will not be felt by our own people as well. Our struggle is linked to the fate of the victims in the Arab East, and the Palestinian people are an embodiment of the resistance to imperial control. They speak to us. They are linked to us. They are part of our own struggle.
212-209-2950. Your contributions with you can stage over time with your credit card, your MasterCard, your Visa, or monthly debit card, your check debit card from your bank. Or you can send a check or money order, 212-209-2950. The phones are ringing. We would like all the lines lit up. We have these wonderful volunteers in the premium room. And we want to get to play other segments of this program, provocative, stimulating, information that you don't normally hear. And I have to say, moved me to tears as Ralph was making the presentation. This first CD presentation, the initial presentation during the lecture by Ralph, is 1 hour. We don't have time to play all the segments of it. But we would like to go now to a discussion, particularly of Zionism in the relationship to the Jews, something that is for which there is much dissimulation, and which Ralph, in a very lucid way, exposes in a brief presentation. So if Michael is ready, we can proceed. And later on, we're going to go to the discussion of the roadmap, and also in Ralph will discuss during the discussion period, which you'll hear in the next hour, more about the strategy for Israel in the 80s, and also way in which the colonial settler state of Israel was formed.
Indeed, what of the relationship which I began to discuss of Zionism to the Jews? The Zionist Federation of Germany, its memorandum of support to the Nazi Party on June 21, 1933, a rebirth of national life such as occurring in German life will also take place in the Jewish national group. On the foundation of the new National Socialist State, which has established the principle of race, we wish our community to fit into total structure so that for us too, in the sphere assigned to us, we shall work fruitfully for the fatherland. Indeed, the Jewish organizations and the Jewish leaders throughout Europe at the time of the rise to power of Adolf Hitler, which occurred at the time of the Great Depression when marks were being carried around in wheelbarrows, attempted to organize a boycott of Nazi goods and Nazi production. That boycott was broken by the World Zionist Congress, which set up the Havara to market Nazi goods throughout the Middle East and Northern Europe. From the inception the Zionists were in collusion. In 1937, the Labor Socialist Zionist Militia, the Haganah, sent 5 Opokas to Berlin to offer their services to the SS security services. Adolf Eichmann was invited to Palestine as the guest of the Haganah. 5 Opokas to Eichmann. Jewish nationalist circles are very pleased with the radical German policy, since the strength of the Jewish population in Palestine will be so far increased that in the foreseeable future we can reckon upon numerical superiority and domination over the Arabs. Ben-Gurion, to a meeting of labor Zionists in Great Britain in 1938, "If I knew that it were possible to save all the children in Germany by bringing them out, but only a handful by transporting them as colonists to Eretz Israel, we opt for the second alternative." Beryl Katznelson, editor of the labor Zionist Davar, describing, quote, "the cruel criteria of Zionism," unquote. "These German Jews are too old to bear children in Palestine. They are not Zionists. We need colonists, trained, armed colonists, supported by the regimes themselves." As late as 1943, while the Jews of Europe were being exterminated in their millions, the United States Congress proposed to set up a commission to study the problem. Rabbi Stephen Weiss, the principal spokesperson for Zionism, went to Washington to testify against any rescue bill, any reduction in quotas, any allowance of immigration to the United States, to Great Britain, to Canada, to Australia, because it will divert attention from our colonization of Palestine. Yitzhak Grunbaum, the chairperson of the Zionist Committee set up to investigate the condition of European Jews: "When they come to us with a plan to rescue the masses of Jews in Europe or the redemption of the land, without a second thought, we support the redemption of the land. The more said about the slaughter of these people in Europe, the greater the minimization of our attempts to promote the Hebraization of the land. If there were the possibility of today of buying arms with the money of the Karen Hasayed, the United Jewish Appeal, and send it to Palestine, as opposed to sending aid to the Jews of Europe, would we do the latter? No, and once again, no." In July 1944, the Slovakian Jewish leader, Rabbi Dov Michael Weiss Mandel, in a letter to Zionist officials charged with, quote, rescue organizations, he had provided them with exact mapping of the railways and appealed for the bombing of the tracks on which the Hungarian Jews were being transported to the crematoria. He appealed for the bombing of the furnaces at Auschwitz, for the parachuting of ammunition to 80,000 prisoners, for the parachuting of saboteurs to blow up the means of annihilation, to end the cremation of what he described as 130,000 Jews a day. Weiss Mandel is not alone. Throughout the 30s and 40s, Jewish spokespersons in Europe cried out for help, for public campaigns, for organized resistance, for demonstrations to force the hand of the Allied governments. They were met not merely by Zionist silence, but by active Zionist sabotage. Here is the cri de coeur of Rabbi Weiss Mandel, writing to the Zionists in July 1944. "Why have you done nothing until now? Who is guilty of this frightful betrayal? Are you not guilty, you who have the greatest good fortune in the world, your liberty? We send you this special message to inform you that yesterday the Germans began the deportation of Jews from Hungary. The deported go to Auschwitz to be put to death by cyanide gas. Here is the schedule of Auschwitz from yesterday to the end. 12,000 Jews, men, women, and children, old men, infants, healthy and sick, are to be suffocated daily. And you, our Zionist brothers, you ministers of all the kingdoms, how you keep silent in the face of this great murder. Silent you are, our thousands upon thousands, reaching now to 6 million, are murdered, and silent now while tens of thousands are being murdered and waiting to be murdered. Their destroyed hearts cry out to you for help as they bewail your cruelty. Brutal you are, and murderous too you are, because of the cold-bloodedness of the silence in which you watch, because you sit with folded arms and do nothing. Although you could stop and delay the murder of these Jews at this very hour. You, sons of Israel, are you insane? Don't you know the hell around us? For whom are you using this money, you murderers, you madmen? Who is it gives charity? You who toss a few pennies from your safe homes while you conspire against us, or we who give our blood in the depths of hell? The Holocaust? The culmination of Zionist betrayal was the sacrifice of Hungary's Jews in a series of agreements between the Zionist movement and Nazi Germany, which first became known in 1953. Dr. Rudolf Kastner of the Jewish Agency Committee in Budapest, under the directions of Ben-Gurion, signed a secret pact of Adolf Eichmann to, quote, settle the Jewish question in Hungary. This took place in 1944, and the pact sealed the fate of 800,000 Jews. Kastner was under the direction of the Zionist leaders when he made his agreement with Eichmann, and the quid pro quo was 600 prominent Zionist leaders who were to be transported out. When a survivor, Machiel Greenwald, exposed the pact and denounced Kastner as a collaborator whose, quote, deeds in Budapest under Zionist direction cost the lives of hundreds of thousands of Jews, he was sued by the Israeli government. And even the Israeli Supreme Court came to the conclusion the sacrifice of Hungarian Jews in order to secure the prominence was the basic element of the agreement between Kastner and the Nazis. They fixed the division of the nation into a small fragment of prominent Zionist leaders, and on the other hand, the great majority of Hungarian Jews designated for death. The Zionist collaborators kept secret the plans of extermination, betrayed the leaders of the resistance, colluded in the transportation vehicles themselves, participated fully in the entire process of deportation. That is the record of the relation of Zionism to the Jews, Zionism's perfidy. The betrayal of the victims of the Holocaust is but the culmination of their attempt to identify the interests of the Jews of Europe with those of the established order. They made their pact with the most retrograde and imperial regimes of the day. And indeed, the most remarkable declaration of all can be found in Vladimir Jabotinsky's final work, The Jewish War Front. He wrote of his plans for the Palestinian people. Since we have now obtained this moral authority for calmly envisaging the exodus of Palestinians, we need not regard their forced departure of 900,000 with dismay. Herr Hitler has been enhancing the popularity of population transfer. This remarkable declaration in the Jewish War Front synthesizes Zionist thought and its moral bankruptcy. The slaughter of the Jews gave Zionism a great moral authority. For what? For calmly envisaging the exodus of Palestinians. The lesson of Nazi destruction of the Jews was that it was permissible now for the Zionists to visit the same fate upon the entire Palestinian population, and 7 years later the Zionists emulated the Nazi genocide whose backing they sought and achieved, and they covered bleeding Palestine in a multiple of liturgies, driving 850,000 people into exile. That is the legacy, that is the reality, that is the character of the Zionist state, that is the meaning of the policies in the West Bank and Gaza, that is the logic of Jenin, that is the meaning of the wall, that is why the Wehrmacht plan, the literal Wehrmacht plan for the Warsaw Ghetto, is the model studied by the Israeli Armed Forces commanders not only for the construction of the wall in the West Bank today, but it was the Wehrmacht plan for the destruction of the uprising of the Warsaw Ghetto, which served as the model for the destruction of Jenin, of Nablus, and the old quarter, the thousand-year-old old quarter of Nablus that was leveled to the ground. It is the model, indeed, for Sabra and Shatila. It was the model for the mass graves that would be found all over Lebanon. A mass grave in Ain El Helwe, in Rosh Hadia, in Al Bas, in Burj Al Barajni, after the Israeli occupation in Lebanon, the mass graves in Ain El Helwe were such that the body fluids surfaced to the ground and formed a small river. And the International Committee of the Red Cross building was in the path of this river of body fluids of the mass graves of the massacred. So they moved their building so as not to be in the path of the rivulets of body fluids of the massacre of Ain El Helwe. And you will find nary a report in the International Committee of the Red Cross of the systematic massacre of the Palestinian population, the refugee population, the victim population, the population, the survivors of the massacres of 1948 to 1955 in Palestine. Let us understand the basic elements of the construction of the State of Israel.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Shonman
and Maya Shon, coming to you over WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, your listener-sponsored station, and this is the WBAI Summer Fun Drive. You've been listening to a provocative, stimulating, and moving presentation, a lecture that Ralph and I did at the College of Marin here in the San Francisco Bay Area, The Hidden History of Zionism and the Roadmap as a Dead End for the Palestinian People. The contribution is $100 for a 3-CD set, something you cannot get anywhere besides WBAI. 212-209-2950, MasterCard, Visa, debit card. You know, that makes it easier. You get your payments over time, and, or check or money order. We want to thank some of the people who've been calling in during this first hour. We need to rev up because this is the moment. This is the moment that you can assist yourself. Can contribute to your education, your organizing ability, because you can share the hidden history of Zionism with your friends, your family, your colleagues. Many people say to us, what can I say? What can I say? And here you have the very document that you can give people. You can say, here is the hidden history of Zionism. I want you to listen to it and have a discussion with me afterwards. Ralph?
Well, it's a part of our understanding of what is unfolding with imperialism, that the designs in Palestine and the Middle East reflect U.S. policy for the region at large. In the Haaretz of the 17th of August, there was a lead article by Moshe Reinfeld, Torture Used Much More Frequently by the Shin Bet. A report released Sunday by the Public Committee Against Torture claims that the use of torture in the interrogation of Palestinians has multiplied over the past 2 years. The number of Palestinians subject to Shin Bet Security Service interrogations defined as torture has increased in the hundreds in the first 6 months of 2003. The article is detailed. The abuse of Palestinians has worsened. Can justifiably be termed torture under criteria established by international law. Torture in Israel has once again become routine, concludes the report. Nothing new. Every bit of the horror that we described in the hidden history of Zionism continues as the consequence of this remaining example of a colonial settler state.
You are only hearing segments today. And to hear the entire three-hour presentation, it is your contribution to WBAI, $100, 212-209-2950. You can make your payments over time with your credit card, your MasterCard, your Visa, or your debit card, where a portion is taken out of your bank, your checking account every month, or checks or money orders. Also, contributions beyond $100, for those of you who can afford to do so, are appreciated. WBAI is a very special radio station, as each and every one of you out there understands. Now is the moment. It is an opportunity when we give We express our thanks to you by providing these premiums. This is the hidden history of Zionism. You will not find this anywhere else. No one, I can say, and others have said it too, no one ever makes this presentation as does Ralph Schoenman, Hidden History of Zionism. And as you know from our discussions throughout the almost 2 years of taking aim, our provocative discussions about what is unfolding in the West Bank provides such documentation and analysis that it keeps you riveted, it helps your understanding, and it promotes your organizing abilities. 212-209-2950. $100 for a 3-hour CD set. We did it on CD because many of you today have these CD players and can share this also with your friends, your family, and your colleagues. It is fully tracked so that you can listen to various parts of it over and over again. Ralph.
Very often people are asked to consider that the Palestinian population have the same but not more right than the Israeli settler population to entitlement over the land. What's odd about this is that this view of the relationship between a settler population and its dispersed and occupied victims has never been extended anywhere else. For example, as we discuss in the Hidden History of Zionism and as we lay out in our exchange with the audience at Marin, in South Africa, Dutch and English settlers had been in that country since the 16th century. Yet nobody who had any understanding of the nature of colonialism had required of the people of South Africa that in order to have the right to their self-determination, they first had to guarantee the presence and security of a settler state exclusively based upon the rights of the settlers in Johannesburg or in Durban or in Pretoria or in Cape Town. No less in the Rhodesias, the people of Zimbabwe were not asked to guarantee a white settler state in possession of the land in Salisbury and Harare. There was no requirement of the people of Zambia that they first had to guarantee a white settler state in Ndola and Kitwe and in Lusaka as a predicate for their right to self-determination. Who asked of the Algerian people that the French colonial settlers since 1830 should be allowed first to set up an exclusively settler-controlled state in Algiers and in Oran before the Algerian people were entitled to aspire to their self-determination? It is an absurdity to equate the rights of those victimized, occupied, dispossessed, expelled with the perpetrators of these crimes. Settlers, if they choose to live in a state of the oppressed, a liberated state, as equal citizens, should enjoy that right certainly. But nowhere has it been argued that the colonial settler movement in occupation and apparatus should be on an equal par in claim to the land, to the resources, to the political right of self-determination as the victim people themselves. Only with the decent exceptionalism of the Zionist state, and the nature of that has to do with the relation of Zionism and of the Israeli apparatus to imperialism's most relentless enforcement arm, the intelligence services, the covert operations, the special forces, and the rangers. Only that allows people to think that there's some indecent exceptionalism that would apply to the colonial settler population in Palestine. This is laid out, this is discussed, this is examined in meticulous detail, not just in the Hidden History of Zionism, but in the byplay and exchange that characterizes the three-hour CD that is being offered for the audience today. And we urge you to send your contribution to WBAI, to arm yourselves, to think through the question of which way forward, to have an understanding of the specific feature and character of Zionist colonial settlerism in order to see the necessity for a movement of revolutionary transformation that will embrace the victim population in particular, but also those settlers who come to understand that, as did many settlers in South Africa and in the Rhodesias, that there is no way forward based upon the subjugation of the victim people, that justice and the democratic entitlement of all require a democratic and secular Palestine and an independent Arab nation of Palestine in which Jews or any other people will have rights as citizens equal to all.
212-209-2950 for your $100 contribution to WBAI, the three-hour CD set, The Hidden History of Zionism and the Roadmap as a Dead End for the Palestinian People. Michael, we'd like to thank many of the people who've been calling in, and we hear the phones ringing. Perhaps we can name a few of them on the air.
Yes, we can, Maya. Before we go back to the presentation that Ralph is giving for us this afternoon on the hidden history of Zionism, yours for a pledge of $100 at 212-209-2950. We first must thank the volunteers. Al, we have a couple of volunteers, Al and Emma, back in the tally room taking your pledges now. Again, if you can come down to the radio station, WBAI Radio is located at 120 Wall Street on the 10th floor. If you can come down this afternoon, this early evening, or if you can come down tomorrow morning starting at 7 a.m., please come down, bring your photo ID with you, and we will put you to work straight away, and we'll give you some tea, some water, some coffee, and a few light refreshments. I'd like to thank Bud Korotzer from New York City for your generous donation to WBAI. Thank you, Bud. Calvin Sage from Brooklyn, New York. Thank you as well. John Lyon from New York City, and Adele from Brooklyn, New York. Thank you very much, Adele. Adele Pessin from Brooklyn, New York. And I'd like to thank also Jeffrey Scheinberg from Flushing, New York. And that's what we have right at the moment, but you can become a member and be on our honor roll as well. Make those calls right now to WBAI for this program, Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen, usually heard at the 5 to 6 o'clock time slot, but they'll be on today and have been on since 3 o'clock this afternoon, and there's more to come. So please make your calls right now. Thank you all very, very much for calling and for supporting WBAI Radio. As Maya said earlier, you won't hear this kind of programming. In fact, you won't hear any of the kinds of programs that you hear on WBAI anywhere else on your radio dial. If you like what you're hearing, you're interested in what you are hearing, please call with your support right now. We're in the late summer fundraising drive here at WBAI. This is a mini drive. We usually go for about 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks on a regular fundraising drive, but we're just raising some money for the station here for 6 days. And we again and again appreciate your help and your support for this listener-supported radio station.
And also, again, I'd like to mention, Michael, that if you can help in the pledge room so that we can keep 10 and 12 lines going and not just a couple, please come down to the station. Also, if you get a busy signal, keep trying. 212-209-2950. Many of you listen to Taking Aim and the presentation today over the Internet at WBAI's wonderful and extensive Internet site, www.wbai.org. I'd like to thank Bob Letterer and all the people who've been assisting on the Internet site, because I notice that it's made a real difference to me, and I'm sure it has to you. It's one of the advantages of WBAI, and your donations help to keep the Internet site and the streaming going also. So, but if you're listening on the Internet at www.wbai, remember that you have to pick up your telephone. If it's a long-distance call, it's a worthwhile long-distance call for you. 212-209-2950 to keep your access to WBAI and Taking Aim going. That's 212-209-2950. Our gift to you, $100, for your $100 donation to WBAI, is a three-hour CD set. I'd also like to thank Mark Bilk and Pamela Summers, who have been consistent in maintaining the Taking Aim website, as WBAI relies upon the donated labor, the unpaid producers, and the volunteers. So we at Taking Aim rely upon the many people who devote time to assisting us with our program and bringing these programs to you each week. Our Taking Aim website is www.takingaim.info, and on it you will find an archive of our programs going back to August of 2002, and eventually we'll have all the Taking Aim programs up there on the archive. We do that because our programs are so intense and extensive with documentation that many of you want to hear them over and over again. And also, some of you miss Taking Aim when we're on at 5 to 6. That, again, is what we do to keep in touch with you. So this is your time now to show your appreciation for our efforts and the efforts of all the wonderful staff at WBAI in making all this possible for you. $100 for the 3-CD set, Hidden History of Zionism and the Roadmap as a Dead End for the Palestinian People. 212-209-2950. And, Ralph.
Today's Haaretz, another article by Moshe Reinfeld. The Public Committee Against Torture yesterday urged Attorney General Eliakim Rubinstein to intervene into cases over 300 Palestinian children who have been arrested and held in the last 8 months, routinely subjected to torture. Testimony from the children in Tel Mon prison indicates they have been subjected to sustained violence in jail, beating, kicking, curses, threats, physical and psychological torture, deprived of sleep, their hands tied painfully at odd and painful positions, ice water poured over their bodies, covering their heads with sacks for protracted periods of time, the article goes on. Such is the character of the state. Such is the record of 100 years of torment. Such is the necessity, thereby, to resist this state and to remove it.
We'd like to go now to play segments of the second CD, a discussion of the roadmap as a dead end for the Palestinian people. Michael?
I want to recommend, if you haven't read, The Hidden History of Zionism by Ralph Schoenman, a little taste of which he gave you tonight, because there are many aspects, particularly that relate to the unfolding of the assault against Iraq, that you will see elaborated some 15 years ago, the predictions for what is taking place today. Also, there are many topics that we can't cover tonight, but which we have in great detail on Taking Aim programs. Those since August of 2002 are on our internet site, and we hope to get the ones that we did week by week during the assault on Jenin up there soon, too. But you will find many that deal with the role of the Mossad internationally, Murder Incorporated, and also particularly the role of massacre as the linchpin of Zionist policy. But many people wonder about solutions. What is the solution? They understand the justice, the moral aspect of the struggle of the Palestinian people. But at the same time, over the years, they wonder what could they do? And in that process, they become lawyers for the Zionist state. They call for amnesty for Israel, the world as they see in place. And that's why today I want to deal with the roadmap, because the roadmap is another dead end for the Palestinian people, and it requires the collaboration of the Palestinian people, and it is of their leadership, or misleadership, in effect. And there is a cycle of which they have been pressured into this place. At the end of April 2003, the United States Department of State released, quote, a performance-based roadmap to a permanent two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, which we see throughout the press called the roadmap for short. And it's released not by a Palestinian leadership or the leadership of the Zionist state. In fact, it was released by a quartet. The United States, the major imperial power in the world, the European Union, the United Nations, the fig leaf of so-called self-determination throughout the world, and Russia, the remnants of the Soviet Union. The destination, it says in the roadmap, is a final and comprehensive settlement of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict by 2005. And they're specific about the date. It's a two-state solution, one in which the Palestinian people will have, quote, a leadership acting decisively against terror. The onus is on the Palestinian people to provide the security for the Zionist state, for the colonial settlers, and that they would live side by side. And it says specifically that the Palestinians are responsible for, quote, guaranteeing security with Israel. It's not just the Palestinians. According to the roadmap, it must incorporate the Arab League. And this was expressed in the Beirut Arab Summit last year, when the Arab League itself called for, quote, the acceptance of Israel as a neighbor living in peace and security. And by this they mean not just a political relationship, but an economic relationship. What we have here with this roadmap is a formula for the final liquidation of the Palestinian struggle. The real roadmap process began in 1991 with the Madrid Conference. And I don't know if many of you remember all the information in the press and the future that was forecast for the Palestinian and the Israelis, the Zionists, with the Madrid Conference. In essence, what the Madrid Conference required, it was the first time that there was the direct collusion of the Palestinian leadership. And the essence of it was an abandonment of any aspiration for a democratic and secular Palestine. That is, a Palestine where rights are equal. It didn't matter if you were Muslim or Christian or Jew. It didn't matter if you were of Palestinian origin, or if your origin happened to be in Eastern Europe, or if you were a Jew who had really was an Arab Jew because you came from Yemen or Iraq. But rights would flow as a result of citizenship in Palestine. That is the democratic and secular Palestine. And what was required in Madrid was that the Palestinians really give up sovereignty on the remnant of territory. And what was relegated to the Palestinians is really only 22% of historic Palestine. Now, that's if you consider all of the area of the West Bank and Gaza. It's 22%. But what has happened over the years has been the further occupation with settlements throughout Palestine, and in the process of Madrid and the consequent plans that were proposed by imperialism, essentially the Palestinians were only given 40% of the 22%, which means control over 9%, less than one-tenth of historic Palestine. And on this land, the 4 million Palestinians were supposed to reside. Now, I did some statistics while I was sitting here about kilometers. And essentially, we're talking about a 40-mile swath for Gaza that would be from Los Angeles up not even to Santa Barbara. It's about 80 miles by 40 miles. and of the West Bank of a larger territory. We're talking about a very small area. Daniel Williams described the process. He's a reporter, and he described it in the Los Angeles Times, September 20th, 1991. He said, quote, "The pace of construction on the West Bank and Gaza is exploding." This was right after Madrid, when there was the discussions of sovereignty. He said, "It's a project that reflects the relentless drive of both the Labor Party, the so-called seekers of peace, and the Likud, both the politics of Shamir Peres and of then Housing Minister Ariel Sharon." And he continues in the Times, "The plan was, quote, to blanket the territories with Israeli settlements. No one is placing a limit on the money that will be spent, and this money is coming from American subsidies." The ministry, the housing ministry, run by Ariel Sharon then, doesn't have to account for any of its programs to the Israeli Knesset. And this relentless drive for settlement and occupation, for fragmentation of the remnant land that remains to the Palestinians, was summarized at the time under a plan of Ariel Sharon that was called the Star Plan. And people in Israel wrote a little pamphlet about it, but I haven't seen it really discussed here in the United States. And this plan, as described in Haaretz at the time, was, quote, to establish cities, villages, and settlements all along the Green Line. The Green Line is the so-called demarcation of pre-67 Israel. That is to say, it would have the object, quote, obliterating through the creation of a continuity of Jewish settlement throughout the West Bank and between the West Bank and Israel. So the plan is obvious to the Israeli press and should have been obvious to all of those here in the United States who were struggling for the just aspirations of the Palestinian people. Again, in the Los Angeles Times, this is the U.S. press discussing the Star Plan, which was the plan adopted in 1980. Again, the Los Angeles Times is revealing that it was adopted, accepted, and supported by both major parties in Israel, and it incorporates new settlements throughout the West Bank and Gaza, particularly along the Green Line of the West Bank, in order to put in place the further occupation so that there wasn't really discussion. What people have to realize is that the entire area of what is recognized today of the State of Israel, only 67,000 acres, that's less than a federal park, 67,000 acres are state dominion. And this is land that the Israeli government took over from the British Mandate. All the rest, 4.5 million acres, most of which is recognized now as the State of Israel, belong to the Palestinians who were driven out by massacre, the massacre that Ralph so eloquently described. The Israelis do not have ownership of the land. The Israeli government, the Zionist state, has only given them long-term leases on the property in which they reside. The Israeli state, the Zionist state, calls the land in Israel, they even term it this, absentee property. It is managed by the Israeli Land Administration, according to the rules of the Jewish National Fund that Ralph elaborated upon. Now, in order to sustain an actual occupation, discussions are going on today, as we sit here, about the actual privatization of this absentee property land, the 4.5 million acres in Israel dispossessed from the Palestinians, to actually sell it to the colonial settlers and those born thereafter. In 1991, Haaretz, in September, discussed the full occupation of the West Bank and Gaza. Quote, the planned doubling of the Israeli population in the West Bank and the settlement program will speed up the strangulation of the Palestinian people in the West Bank. Israel will hold control of the land, the water, the budgeting, and the planning, while 2 million Palestinians will be delegated to closed pockets, what we call in South Africa Bantustans, isolated and cut off from one another with a low and backward standard of living and blocks of Israeli settlements surrounding them, imposing rigid security, political, and economic control over them. Now, this is Haaretz. It was quite obvious what was going on. And Anthony Kuhn, in a study called Urban Planning in the West Bank in April of 1991, said that, quote, 60% of the West Bank is already appropriated. Already appropriated. Remember, I was saying 40% of the 22% is really all that's been relegated for the Palestinians. 9% of historic Palestine. Because the Israelis, through their settlement and through military closures, have appropriated the rest of historic Palestine. Virtually all the land is closed and requisitioned, classified as state land or abandoned property. And this is what the Israelis do for the construction of settlements and for the roads that are connecting these settlements, the new road system, which are Jews-only roads. They are specifically Jews-only roads. And they connect the settlements in the West Bank, Gaza, with Jerusalem and with Israel physically and economically, and as Kuhn says, fragmenting and containing all existing Palestinian communities, essentially creating a prison system for the Palestinians.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Shunman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you during this very special WBAI fund drive, our summer fund drive. This is WBAI 99.5 FM in New York and on the internet, www.wbai.org. We want to thank all of you who've been calling in to show your appreciation and your support for WBAI. You've been listening to excerpts from The Hidden History of Zionism and The Roadmap as a Dead End for the Palestinian People. It's a three-hour, three CD fully tracked set for our for your donation of $100 to WBAI. It's our gift to you. 212-209-2950. Your MasterCard, your Visa, your debit card, your checks or your money orders are accepted. 212-209-2950. Please have patience with the people in the pledge room. There are a couple of people there. They'll answer your phone call, and you may have to hold a little bit till they can get to you. But keep those phones ringing. We can hear them ringing, and we want to thank all of you, even if we can't get to thank you particularly online. 212-209-2950. You've been listening to excerpts of the presentation about the roadmap, and in this second CD, we also go into extensive discussion of the barrier wall, which is called euphemistically the seam that has been under construction and actually was the plan of former Prime Minister Ehud Barak in the year 2000, and is definitely under construction and is separating many towns and villages of Palestinians. 210,000 people of Palestinians on the West Bank are engulfed by this barrier wall, unable to move freely and get even to their own farms. And there's extensive discussion that we don't have time to play for you today, but of the ramifications of this barrier wall.
Yes, starvation, the total elimination of the basic services that sustain a population, education has come to a halt, health care is a thing of the past, Palestinian people cannot move, literally, from one location to another. They can't visit members of their families. They can't visit relations. Every time they enter onto a road to go to a food to a grocery store, they're putting their lives at risk when they encounter the ubiquitous checkpoints and the exclusive roads of the settlers and of the army. It is a condition of not just subjugation, but of the relentless destruction of the infrastructure for survival of a people. It is designed to induce, to coerce, to require the removal of the population through attrition. And indeed, in the report of Haaretz, once again by the Israeli writer Baruch Kra, Physicians for Human Rights lodged complaints with the police about the condition of women in this in the notorious Nevatertsa women's prison. The Public Committee Against Torture established that these women are denied medical care and changes of clothing. The wardens, I am quoting from Haaretz, they beat them with clubs, they use water cannons, they prevent them from seeing doctors, they invade their privacy. Every, quote, every warden who passes me hits me with a club, particularly on the arms and legs, said one prisoner in an affidavit. When a warden hit me on the head, I fainted and lost consciousness. Every girl in this prison has bruises and swellings and broken bones. A large force of jailers enter the cells, use tear gas. The women are stripped of their clothing. They are left naked. The guards pass by. They look and they laugh. The reports continue. Occupied Palestine, the subjugation of an entire people.
212-209-2950. Let's get those phones ringing right now for the hidden history of Zionism and the roadmap as a dead end for the Palestinian people. This is stimulating, provocative programming you're not going to hear anywhere. And you're also, while we put our weekly Taking AIM programs on the internet site, the premiums do not go up there. So the this is available only as your gift to your donation, your sustaining of WBAI, the Hidden History of Zionism and the Roadmap as a Dead End for the Palestinian People, a three-hour CD set. And again, I want to thank Bonnie Faulkner and Yara Mako of Guns and Butter on KPFA here in Berkeley, a sister station in the Pacifica network of WBAI, who are devoted to Taking AIM and taped our lecture at the College of Marin. There is something about when you make a presentation before a live audience that creates a stimulating discussion, as you're going to hear in the question and answer period is on the next CD, the third CD. Remember, today we can only play excerpts from the three CD set. 212-209-2950, MasterCard, Visa, debit card, or checks and money order. And your contribution of $100 will get you the three CD set, The Hidden History of Zionism and The Roadmap as a Dead End for the Palestinian People, a unique premium for WBAI. As well, greater contributions are appreciated, too. Ralph.
Yes, and indeed the condition that we've described here of the people of Palestine is one that is not ending soon, but on the contrary, the crisis deepens, and our need for an understanding of what drives it forward and our exposure of the real nature of Zionism as an ideology is, in our judgment, ever more current and a condition of our ability to move forward is our awareness and understanding of the elements that comprise this movement, its history and its practice.
Ralph, when it one thing I think people it would be interesting to know is some of the experience you had in the proposals for the solution to the Palestinian crisis and the struggle for self-determination, because you were involved in active negotiations in the early 1960s.
Well, yes, Maya. Well, you're referring to the time when I was working with Bertrand Russell at the time of the Bertrand Russell Peace Foundation's inception. In those years, we were in close contact with Gamal Abdel Nasser after the advent of power officers' revolt in Egypt. Nasser, in the early 60s, had proposed to Bertrand Russell that a Palestinian state be founded in Gaza and in the West Bank with a corridor through the Negev. Proposal,
the Negev Desert.
The Negev Desert, yes, in the southern part of occupied Palestine. It's a proposal that we today, of course, have long understood to be a formula for capitulation, but leaving that aside, at the time, I had extended meetings in Egypt with the Egyptian leadership and with Ibrahim Hamil Abdel Rahman, who was at that time the Secretary General of the United Arab Republic, with Salah Dasuki, who was the Governor General of Cairo Province. And subsequently, with we had these proposals, which we took from Nasser to King Faisal of Riyadh in Saudi Arabia, and also to Saab Salem, the Prime Minister of Lebanon. But I was going to mention Maya Abdul Karim Qasim, who was the President of Iraq, and the young officer who had assumed power after the Iraqi Revolution of 1958. With whom we established a particular bond and long series of discussions and meetings, and with Hashim Jawad, the then foreign minister of Iraq, and with Mohammed Yahya, who was the minister of justice. All of these discussions were centered on the reality that each of these governments had experienced, in which the Israelis had made it very clear that their project was for the further fragmentation of each Arab state. In certain respects, the approach by Nasser was to expose the real nature of Israeli policy every bit as it was a formula for some form of limiting of Israeli expansion. Saab Salem said to me at the time, you know, every step that the Zionists take, their plans to occupy Lebanon, indicate that it's only a question of stages of operation. When we went to Tel Aviv and I had meetings with Ben-Gurion and then Defense Minister Shimon Peres, Ben-Gurion went over the documents and the proposals, and then he fixated on the name Salah Dasuki, who was, as I mentioned, the Governor General of Cairo Province. And he suddenly looked and with a sneer on his face said to me, Suki, Suki, who? Suk in Arabic means bizarre. He was making a contemptuous and even racist comment made with a play on the meaning of Suk in Salah Dasuki.
Bizarre, B-A-Z. The marketplace.
The marketplace. I said to Ben-Gurion, Mr. Prime Minister, that is the kind of remark that is usually made about Eastern European peddlers like ourselves, the descendants of the victim peoples of Jews in Eastern Europe. And you should use a racist terminology of that kind to characterize distinguished Arab statesmen is rather revealing. Of course, it went downhill from there. There was no interest whatsoever. In fact, Shimon Peres focused entirely on the plans at that time in Dimona for an Israeli nuclear capacity, rather defiantly. Shimon Peres said to me, we don't have any alternative in choice. We're preparing a nuclear program in Israel. He was explicit about that. We documented all of that at the time. It was the series of those meetings and discussions which led Bertrand Russell and the Bertrand Russell Peace Foundation to launch a campaign, and not just in defense of the Palestinian people, but in opposition to Israeli plans for expansion and in exposing those plans. It's been no less true in the intervening 40 years that this particular state, subsidized by the United States, entirely dependent upon American subsidy, it comes to about $12 million a year, is but an extension of imperialism in the region. From its inception, as we document in the Hidden History, the project has been the removal of the people of Palestine from history.
212-209-2950, the provocative, stimulating, and moving discussion of the hidden history of Zionism, as you will not hear anywhere else except from Ralph Schoenman and myself, Maya Schoen, and the roadmap as the dead end for the Palestinian people. I asked Ralph to give us a little taste of some of these discussions, because many people don't realize that the incredible documentation that we provide and the analysis is based not only from our research and extensive research at that, but from lived experience.
May I mention, Maya, just in conjunction with this, when Maya and I were in Beirut in 1982, at the time of the Israeli invasion of Lebanon, as it happened, Saab Salem, who had been prime minister at the time that I had seen him in 1962, 20 years earlier, was now once again in office in Lebanon. He's the leader of the Sunni Muslims, and we went into for a meeting with him, and he took a look at me, and he said, "You see, Schoenman, I was right. He didn't break stride 20 years after," and we laughed together. Same animal, same condition, same crisis, same problem, an occupied country, the camps being besieged, the Palestinian population being dispossessed, the massacres unfolding in camp after camp. Yes.
The Hidden History of Zionism, 3-hour CD, fully tracked set, $100 for your donation to WBAI, 212-209-2950. We want to play a little bit before we get to the 5 o'clock hour of the third CD, The Question and Answer. We are going to return at 5 o'clock again to excerpts from the first presentation, the extensive presentation by Ralph of the four myths, and also return to some of the question and answer period. 212-209-2950. Please keep the phones ringing off the hook throughout this presentation. This is your only opportunity. This is a one-week fund drive. You will have no other chance for this three CD set, the three-hour Hidden History of Zionism and the Roadmap as a Dead End for the Palestinian People.
Brothers and sisters, I suggest that the discussion of the way forward and the solution, if you like, or the mode of struggle for the emancipation of the people of Palestine and of the region emerge out of our discussion rather than to launch into a presentation on that particular subject. Let's go to the discussion, and it will come to pass out of that discussion, I'm sure. So I think we just throw it open, and there are many issues that we want to address, but we can do that in the course of our exchange. Everyone who has been involved in the question of the self-determination of peoples, everybody who's familiar with the basic democratic demands of oppressed and colonially subjugated peoples is aware of the distinction between immigrating to a place and colonizing it. You know, the South African settler population began its conquest of Azania of South Africa in the 16th century. 400 and 500 years of English and Dutch settlers were involved in the colonization of Azania. Similarly, in the Rhodesias, the French began their conquest of Algeria in 1830. In the long struggle for self-determination for a black republic in South Africa, no one predicated the right of the people of South Africa to their self-determination upon their requirement to secure an exclusively settler state in Cape Town, Durban, and Johannesburg. No one suggested that in Zambia, first, there had to be an exclusive colonial settler state apparatus in Lusaka and Ndola and Kitwe. No less in Zimbabwe was Harare required to be the center of an exclusively white settler state. The people of Algeria were not told that the French settler population had first to have a secure state in Oran and in Algiers before the people of Algeria were entitled to aspire to self-determination. It is an absurdity. to think that the settler population enjoys an equivalent right to the people that they have dispossessed and conquered. On the contrary, it is the entitlement of anyone who wishes to emigrate to a place to accept citizenship on equal terms. And that applies no less to Palestine than in South Africa or Rhodesia or in Zania or in Zimbabwe or in Algeria or in Morocco or Tunisia and so on. So the notion, I mean, a state like the Israeli state would be an outrage even if it were anchored on a ship off of Haifa. A state is not coextensive with a people. Why are we required to defend the colonial settler apparatus in Palestine when no one who has any semblance of understanding of the democratic entitlement of the oppressed would make such a demand upon the people of South Africa or of the Rhodesias or of Algeria or of any other colonially oppressed area of the world? So the first and the basic element of any, quote, way forward, let alone solution to the question of Palestine, is the de-Zionization of the state, is the removal, the overthrow, the dismantling of the Zionist apartheid state apparatus in Palestine. And that is a project not only of the Palestinian people, but indeed of all those of the settler population who understand that the ultimate ghetto and the ultimate entrapment of this settler population is to be pitted against the aspirations and fundamental democratic entitlement of 150 million people of the Arab East. So a de-Zionized state, a democratic and secular Palestine in which rights do not flow from ethnicity or from the accident of the religious affiliation, is the absolute prerequisite for anything that resembles a resolution of the crisis of the dispossession and the liquidation of the organized existence of the Palestinian people. And there is a peculiar aspect, too, to the settler population in Palestine, because nearly 70% of the settler population in Palestine are what they call Mizrahi, or Sephardim, or Oriental Jews. Now, a Jew from Yemen or Morocco or from Iraq, or from Syria, looks like Gamal Abdel Nasser, has the wedding customs, the mores, the eating habits, the acculturation of an Arab who happens to be a Jew as opposed to a Muslim or Christian or a non-believer. And the Arab Jews, as it were, in Palestine, who are called Schwarzes or Black Jews, are but 3% of the graduates of universities in Palestine, and less than 10% of the employees in the professions or in the public sector, in the settler state of Israel, which I prefer to refer to as Palestine. But the point being here that the great majority of the Jews themselves, and the irony it is, are Arab Jews, and the Ashkenazi operate an extraordinary hegemony over this population and treat them in a racist fashion. They are in ghettos, they are excluded. They are the recipients of a fraction of the public funds for education and for health and for welfare and for so on. So the irony of it is that the very treatment of Arabs who happen to be Jews is about a quarter step different from the treatment of the Palestinian people themselves, which is why the Black Panther movement emerged amongst the slum dwellers of the Arab Jews in the 60s and 70s. And of course, many of you may be aware that the process through which the Jews of the Arab East were brought to Israel was instructive, particularly for to take the example of Iraq, where the Jews had been entirely integrated within the civil and the social and economic and political life of the Iraqi nation. And there was almost vanishing little interest on the part of the Iraqi Jews to leave Iraq, as there was throughout the Arab East, because for the most part, the Jews in the Arab world never experienced the systematic persecution and demonization that they suffered in Europe. And particularly in the case of Iraq, what the Zionists undertook, the Mossad, was the systematic bombing of synagogues throughout Iraq, a terror campaign to create a panic and a hysteria amongst, and that bombing campaign of synagogues included targeted assassinations of Jewish prominence by the Mossad to create the conditions for the exodus of Iraqi Jews. And one of those who was a leader of the Iraqi Jews, a man named Naim Jalabi, when he came to Israel and when he registered and documented the circumstances under which the Iraqi exodus, the Jewish exodus from Iraq, was achieved. It's Naeem Jalali, who was one of the leaders of the Black Panther movement amongst the Sephardim in Israel. And as to the Ashkenazi, and there's a particular irony about all this, because the Ashkenazi settler population has vanishingly little relation to the peoples of the region. You know, the rationale, of course, is that there's an ingathering of a people that is, for the most part, descended from Jewish converts in the 8th and 9th century, the Khazars and the Karaites and the Turkomans, and who have no relation to the Semitic peoples of the region at all. Which is why European descendants of European Jews like Maya and myself are susceptible to something called Tay-Sachs disease, for which there's no genetic disposition amongst non-European Jews. So in fact, what you have here is the irony that the Ashkenazi, who are the dominant settler population in Palestine, have vanishing little relation to the peoples of the region. But in any event, the point here is that a struggle for the liberation of Palestine must encompass the Jewish settlers through the incorporation of anti-Zionist leaders in a movement for a democratic and secular Palestine, so that the Jews in Palestine will see, and Israel will understand, that to be linked to an oppressive state of this character guarantees them a permanent condition of insecurity and of inexorable conflict, a no way out. And of course, this is a completely artificial construct, this state. $100 billion of subsidy from the United States since the formation of the state. It comes out to about $30,000 per inhabitant. It is but the extension of imperialism in the region. It is the cat's paw. So the way forward must involve the engagement, notably of the Arab Jews, the Sephardim, the Mizrahi, but also of the Jewish working class, above all that working class which is now in the process of being asked to pay for the collapse of the economy in Israel. And as imperialism and as the world capitalist system, through its falling rate of profit, is entering a prolonged crisis, you are seeing the privatization of all property in Israel, the dislocation and the removal of social services, even for the privileged settler population themselves. So this is the means to which a class-based understanding of the nature of this struggle, the imperial, anti-imperial character of the struggle, the anti-capitalist character of the struggle, the socialist content of the struggle, can address itself to the settler working class amongst the settler population itself, to engage them in a common struggle with their brothers and sisters in Palestine. And many is the occasion when the Ashkenazim journalists and writers have denoted, if you take a taxi cab in Tel Aviv or Jerusalem, which is invariably driven by what appears to be an Arab, but in fact is an Arab Jew, and the arrogance with which these people are treated by the Ashkenazim, many is the time when they've turned to Palestinians or Arabs and said, one of these days we're going to have to deal with these people. The sentiment of the Arab Jews in Palestine is one of deep resentment against their exploitation and their treatment. And so it is that they must be encompassed and included in the struggle for a democratic and secular Palestine. An Arab Palestine, a Palestine of the dispossessed population, in which the rights of all will be those of citizens. Not a function of their ethnicity, not a function of their religious affiliation, but that of citizens. As in South Africa today, a Frenchman who wants to live in Algeria has every right to Algerian citizenship and should be entitled to all of the perquisites and prerogatives of an Algerian citizen. But not as a settler entitled to exclusivity of ownership of land, of ownership of the means of production, of ownership and control over the state apparatus. It's a basic, elementary, 18th century democratic demand. And of course, integral to the struggle for a liberated Palestine, an Arab Palestine, in which rights are extended to all who choose to remain as equal citizens, is an end to U.S. aid to apartheid Israel. Because Israel is but a subset, an extension of imperialism and of American imperial control. In this regard, I think it's important to mention that in the mid-1970s, the Mossad elaborated a detailed plan for the fragmentation of each Arab state in its turn and its breakdown into its original ethnic and religious components, what Abba Iban had called the millet system of the Ottoman Empire. Called a strategy for Israel in the 1980s, the plan, which was written by a Mossad intelligence operative named Oded Yinon, called for the breakup of each Arab state in its turn. And that policy was linked to the creation of the category of terror. And conferences were organized by that Central Intelligence Agency operative, Benjamin Netanyahu, who had four different names and social security cards under which he was operating. In the United States, it was none other than John J. Sullivan. And Netanyahu, at the age of 28, with the support of George Bush and George Shultz and the Council on Foreign Relations, created a conference on the question of terror in Tel Aviv and then moved to Washington and became the centerpiece for the American Enterprise Institute and for the Committee on the Present Danger and what would later become the Project for a New American Century. The liquidization of the imperial center, the incorporation of the plan for the fragmentation of each Arab country in its turn, predicated upon the notion of the category of terror, which in the National Security Council, with the support of what are called the neocons, or the Pearls and the Wolfowitzes and the Michael Adeens and the Paul Bremers and the Douglas Keiths, this entire cabal, which is now at the center of imperial policy, they linked this to the necessity to rebuild the American military on a scale unprecedented before. And they talked openly, as did Condoleezza Rice in the National Security Council, about the necessity for the Pearl Harbor-like event in order to terrorize, if you like, the American people into numbed acquiescence into this agenda of war ad seriatim. So the struggle forward in Palestine, the way forward in Palestine, the way forward for the oppressed people of the Arab East, is not just a struggle against imperialism, but in the imperial center itself. To understand that 9/11, September 11, was but the continuation of state terrorism designed to whipsaw the American people into a numbed acquiescent acceptance of an agenda that no one in their right mind could have contemplated being advanced, let alone implemented. And the predicate of this, of course, is the elimination of the formal democratic rights of people in this society. You know, Malcolm X, at the time of the execution of John F. Kennedy, said, "You cannot have a murder apparatus transcending the globe and think it's going to stop at your national frontiers. The chickens," said Malcolm, "have come home to roost." And brothers and sisters, the imposition upon suffering Palestine is about to come home to roost, targeting our own working people, targeting our own population as it is victimized by this degenerating capitalist state, unable to meet the most minimum demands for our social services, our health care, our education, our living standards, cannibalizing the infrastructure of our society, stealing all the available funds to channel them into this kleptocracy that goes by the name of a ruling class that 1% of the population that owns 90% of the national wealth in the United States.
And Maya Schoen, we're coming to you August 19th, 2003, for this very special WBAI Summer Fund Drive. Welcome, our Taking Aim audience. We hope most of you were able to tune in when we came on at 2 o'clock for this special 3-hour fund drive. Excuse me, at 3 o'clock for this special 3-hour fund drive. Special of the hidden history of Zionism and the roadmap as a dead end for the Palestinian people. For a $100 contribution to WBAI, to sustain WBAI and keep it viable and bringing the wonderful programming to you, the essential programming to you, we are offering our three-hour CD set. It's three CDs fully tracked of the hidden history of Zionism and the roadmap as a dead end for the Palestinian people. The number to call is 212-209-2950. You can make stage payments with your MasterCard, your Visa, your debit card, or you can provide a check or money order to WBAI. It's been a lively 2 hours so far with a provocative, stimulating, and moving program that moves me to tears, and I know will move you as it did the audience at College of Marin here in the San Francisco Bay Area, at which we gave this important lecture, The Hidden History of Zionism and the Roadmap as a Dead End for the Palestinian People. We had been asked by the Palestine Committee of the Peace and Justice Coalition in Marin County to provide this presentation, and many of the student organizations and other organizations in Marin County and in Sonoma County were sponsors of this significant event. And it's amazing what the response has been for the WBAI listeners so far, and we hope that now with our regular Taking Aim audience that you are going to keep these phones ringing off the hook. Now, if you are asked to hold because there aren't that many people in the tally room, in the pledge room, please be patient, but keep on calling 212-209-2950. Our Taking Aim audience has been an essential component of WBAI's financial health, and we want to keep it that way. We know you are longtime listeners of WBAI, and we know that you particularly appreciate the fact that WBAI has, for the past almost 2 years, has had Taking Aim on regularly. So 212-209-2950. What we're going to do during this hour is play an excerpt, again, another excerpt of the first CD, an hour-long presentation by Ralph of the Four Myths, particularly focusing on the colonization of Palestine by the Zionists. And what we played before, and we won't have time to go into at this time, is the relationship of the Zionist movement, its portrayal of the Jews themselves, its collaboration with the Nazi movement. But that extensive documentation is on the first CD. The second CD, it delineates the roadmap as a dead end for the Palestinian people, and we hope that you tuned in earlier and heard an excerpt of that. And the third CD has extensive response to the many questions that came from the lively and focused audience of people at the College of Marin. So it's a three CD program, 3 hours, fully tracked so that you can listen to excerpts of it as you would be reading a chapter of a book. Now, this is a program that you're going to want not just for yourself, but you're going to want to have another copy for your friends, your family, your colleagues, and you're going to want to circulate around. Many people say, what is the response? What are the? They have so many questions about the issues of the Palestinian people, and they want further understanding, and they also question the documentation. Well, here you have chapter and verse with the citation from the Zionists themselves with the hidden history of Zionism and the roadmap as the roadmap as a dead end for the Palestinian people. 212-209-2950. We want lots of phones filling up the phone bank in the tally room before we go to the first CD. I had mentioned before, and I'll do it again, the response of Rabbi Elmer Berger, who had said about the hidden history of Zionism and the extensive documentation that Ralph had compiled, that it was indispensable for anyone attempting to understand the uprising of the Palestinian people. Ralph Schoenman's command of the facts and his coherent organization of them to reach irrefutable conclusions are a bonanza. A bonanza, Rabbi Elmer Berger, president of American Jewish Alternatives to Zionism. And that bonanza is what we are bringing you today with a 3-CD set, The Hidden History of Zionism, and the current information, the attempts by the imperialist powers to subjugate the Palestinians and, in fact, have the full capitulation and have the Palestinians provide the security for the Zionist state. Ralph?
As we've discussed, Maya, when these efforts are made to advocate and set forth the nature of Zionism as a deeply reactionary ideology linked to imperialism and linked to the most reactionary regimes of Europe, one of the most telling and savage ironies of all this is that the opponents of Zionism, the critics of the Zionist legacy, are slandered as anti-Semites. And the question is constantly being raised as to whether the exposure of the nature of the Zionist movement and its state apparatus in Israel requires anti-Semitic sensibility. And what's irony, what is ironic about that is that it was the Zionist movement which had abandoned the struggle against racism and anti-Semitism. Herzl had written of the Jews in the following fashion: "I have achieved a free attitude towards anti-Semitism, which I now begin to understand historically and to pardon. Above all, I recognize the emptiness and futility of trying to combat anti-Semitism." Here's what the Zionist organization, the youth organization of the Zionist movement, the Hashomer Hatzair, the Young Guard, wrote. Quote, "A Jew is a caricature of a normal, natural human being, both physically and spiritually. As an individual in society, he revolts and throws off the harness of social obligation, knows no order nor discipline," unquote. Jabotinsky: "The Jewish people is a very bad people. Its neighbors hate it, and rightly so. Its only salvation lies in a general immigration to the land of Israel," unquote. The founders of Zionism spared of combating anti-Semitism and, paradoxically, regarded the anti-Semites themselves as allies because of a shared desire to remove the Jews from the country in which they lived. Step by step, the Zionists assimilated the values of Jew hatred and anti-Semitism as the Zionist movement came to regard the anti-Semites themselves as their most reliable sponsors and protectors. That's the history, that's the irony, that's the true dynamic of the ideological character of Zionism. The dirty history, the dirty secret, Maya, of Zionist history is that Zionism was threatened by the Jews themselves. Defending the Jewish people from persecution meant organizing resistance to the regimes that menaced them. But those regimes embodied the imperial order, which comprised the only social force willing or able to impose a settler colony on the Palestinian people. Hence, the Zionists needed the persecution of the Jews to persuade Jews to become colonizers afar, and they needed the persecutors to sponsor the enterprise. That is the real relation of Zionism to anti-Semitism.
212-209-2950. In a few moments, we're going to start with excerpts from the first CD, Hidden History of Zionism and the Roadmap as a Dead End for the Palestinian People. Your contributions can be staged with your MasterCard, your Visa, your bank debit card, or you can make out checks or money orders to WBAI. Remember, WBAI not only broadcasts via the radio, but also on the Internet at www.wbai.org. If you're listening on the Internet, as many people throughout the world do, to Taking AIM and the programs, this is the moment to make that long-distance call and dial 212-209-2950. It is only through the direct pledge line that you can get your contribute to WBAI now and receive as our thank you the 3-hour CD set. So we want to play excerpts, as I said, of the first and of the first CD, Ralph's presentation, and the third CD with the questions and answers. The second CD with the discussion, my discussion of the roadmap. You're going to have to make your donation to get if you missed the presentation during our last hour. So if Michael's ready, we're going to gear up. And remember, keep to the phone calls while you're listening, because you're going to be getting your copy very soon of this 3-CD set, and you can listen to it over and over again. If you've read The Hidden History of Zionism, this is your opportunity to have a living document, a living testament that will move you to tears as well as move you to action, and which you can share with your friends, your family, and your colleagues. 212-209-2950.
From the Madrid Conference in 1991 to Oslo. Many of you are familiar with the Oslo Accords, but there have been many more accords since 1991 with Madrid. Gaza, Jericho, Camp David, the Saudi plan, and now with the roadmap. The game, however, has always been the same. The liquidation of the century-old Palestinian struggle for self-determination. The unspeakable suffering and subjugation of the Palestinian people that we witness unfolding today in the West Bank and Gaza. This suffering and subjugation are but the little continuation of how all of Palestine was colonized. It is a shocking history of armed displacement, massacre, and expulsion that dates back to the 19th century. Tonight, Ralph is going to elucidate on the hidden history of Zionism, and then I'll discuss the roadmap and what is unfolding in the West Bank.
Thank you, Maya. Thanks, Bonnie. Thanks, Lori. And thanks to all of you, brothers and sisters, comrades and friends, for coming here for a discussion of an issue that has consumed people and yet suffers from the absence of real concrete data and information pertaining to the nature of Zionism, its origins, its character ideologically, its role historically, and precisely the political process through which Zionism has assumed hegemony in the Middle East and to no small extent over the centers of imperial policy itself, notably since the events of 9/11. There have been four prevalent myths that have characterized our understanding of the nature of Zionism and of the Israeli state that is based upon it, and particularly in the United States and in Western Europe. The first myth pertains to the claim of a land without a people for a people without a land. The second myth is that of Israeli democracy. Virtually every newspaper and every television story and every reference to the Israeli state is prefaced by the claim that it is the only real democracy in the Middle East and so on. The third myth pertains to security as the motive force of Israeli foreign policy. Here you have a predatory a colonial settler operation which has sought to destabilize each Arab nation in the region and to entrap it and ensnare it in conflict, the better to usurp more territory, presenting itself in a defensive posture. And perhaps the fourth and most prevalent myth has been that of Zionism as the moral legatee of the victims of the Holocaust. And what is particularly savage in the irony that surrounds this claim is the fact that the Zionist movement and the Zionist leaders itself were the active collaborators with the perpetrators of the Holocaust. They participated in the suppression of Jewish resistance, and they organized a consistent opposition to any escape on the part of European Jewry. The objective of Zionism has never merely been to colonize Palestine in the manner in which the colonial powers colonized Africa and Asia and, yes, Latin America. In the latter instance, the objective was to obtain resources and cheap labor in the process of imposing a colonial and imperial hegemony. But what distinguishes Zionism from other colonial movements is the relationship between the settlers and the people to be conquered. Because the avowed purpose of the Zionist movement was not merely to exploit the Palestinian people, but to disperse and to dispossess them. The intent was to replace the indigenous population with a new settler community, to eradicate the farmers, the artisans, and the town dwellers of Palestine, and to substitute a workforce composed of a settler population. And in denying the existence of the Palestinian people, the Zionist movement sought to create the political conditions for their removal, not merely from their land, but from history. When acknowledged at all, the Palestinians have been reinvented as a semi-savage nomadic remnant. Historic records have been falsified, a procedure that began during the last quarter of the 19th century, but continues to this very day. The Zionist movement would seek, throughout its inception, alternative imperial sponsors for this bloody enterprise. In fact, if you look carefully at the progenitors of Zionism, the upper layers of the haute bourgeoisie in Europe, their basic approach was to treat anti-Semitism as something not only endemic and inevitable, but also of considerable value. They despaired of any alternative to the anti-Semitic climate of the imperial regimes in which they subsisted. And they advocated making common cause with the anti-Semites for the purpose of converting the Jews of Europe into settlers afar. Herzl approached the most anti-Semitic and retrograde regimes of the day. They approached Count von Plehve of the Tsar, the author of the great pogrom at Kishinev and of the Black Hundreds. And they approached them with the proposition that if they funded and armed a Zionist movement to colonize Palestine, the Zionist movement would undertake that task on behalf of Tsarist imperialism representing its commercial interests in the area. And the same pitch was made to the Kaiser, who for over a decade armed and supported and dallied with the Zionist movement. The same approach made to the French Imperium and, of course, to the British Raj. So from its inception, Zionism has seen as its task enlisting the imperial powers, and indeed the most retrograde and anti-Semitic of them, as the fundamental political economic sponsors of the colonial enterprise itself. And this project embraced as well the fascism of Mussolini. It was Mussolini who funded the Zionist youth movement, particularly Beitar, whose leader was Menachem Begin, who wore the black shirt and gave the fascist salute, which they changed to the brown shirt with the advent of Hitler and Nazism in Europe. And the Zionist movement did not miss a beat with the advent of Nazism in Europe. On the contrary, the local Zionist organization of Germany expressed its open support for the Nazi Party and enlisted the Nazi Party as its sponsors. And the labor Zionists would bring Eichmann to Palestine in the 1930s, Baron von Mildenstein of the SS for a period of 6 months, leading to a 12-part series in the publication of the SS called Der Angriff, which means the assault, praising Zionism, with Heydrich and Himmler overseeing the stamping of a coin with the swastika on one side and the Star of David on the other, culminating indeed in the moment when the Zionist movement of Shamir made a formal military pact with the Wehrmacht, discovered in the German embassy in Ankara at the end of the Second World War and known as the Ankara Document. So in understanding the particular political and ideological character of Zionism, both in relation to its victim people, the Palestinians, but notably in relation to the Jews themselves, we then come to comprehend the cruel irony of the ways in which the Zionist movement has wrapped itself in the collective shroud of the 6 million victims of the Holocaust, the better to visit upon itself a moral authority to impose on the Palestinian people a fate rather like that of the Jews in Europe. From its inception, every major spokesperson for the Zionist movement has set forth clearly what was intended in Palestine. It was nothing less than the systematic removal of the Palestinian people, their dispossession, and their elimination. In 1896, Theodor Herzl set forth his plan for inducing the Ottoman Empire to grant Palestine to the Zionist settler movement. If His Majesty the Sultan were to give us Palestine, we will undertake to regulate the finances of Turkey and form an outpost of civilization in opposition to barbarism, defending Turkish imperial and commercial interests in the region. Speaking at this Congress of the World Zionist Organization in 1905, the 7th World Zionist Congress, Max Nordau, a prominent Zionist leader, put forth before the Zionists themselves their concerns. There is a movement which has taken hold of a great part of the Arab people. It is taking a direction which will cause harm in Palestine. The Turkish government will feel itself compelled to defend its reign in Palestine and Syria with armed force. In these circumstances, we can persuade Turkey that they will require us to carry out their particular operations, a strong, well-organized, relentless military group which will suppress this population and eliminate it. The South African connection is a very old one. It does not merely encompass Prime Minister General Jan Smuts, who is a South African delegate to the British War Cabinet, pushed the British government to adopt the Balfour Declaration, making a commitment to construct a Zionist colony under British direction. The relationship between Zionism and the South African settlers had evolved much earlier, because the settlers played a similar role in South Africa as they would in Palestine. N. Kirshner, the chairman of the South African Zionist Federation, provided a vivid account of the intimate interaction between the Zionists and South African leaders, the identification of Zionists like Weizmann and Herzl with the South African conception of a racially distinct colonizing population. As to Theodor Herzl, the founder of political Zionism, he expressed his fundamental commitment in his modeling of the Zionist program on that quintessential colonial ideologue, Sir Cecil Rhodes. As Herzl wrote about Rhodes, "There are differences between Cecil Rhodes and my humble self, all to my disfavor, to my very great personal disfavor. The objective ones are in favor of our Zionist movement. We will only accomplish the Zionist dispersal of the Palestinians by using the methods pioneered by Rhodes. The Jewish company will be modeled on the colonial chartered company of Rhodes, and it will be a great acquisition company that will carry out its task through military and commercial means. The poorest will first go to cultivate the soil. In accordance with a preconceived land plan, they will construct roads and bridges and railways and telegraphs and regulate rivers and build their own habitations and drive the indigenous population out." One of the ideological forebears of Zionism, Vladimir Jabotinsky, is known as the founder of revisionist Zionism, that Zionist current which had little patience with the liberal and socialist facade employed by labor Zionists. In 1923, Jabotinsky wrote The Iron Wall, which is a benchmark essay for the entire Zionist movement, in which he sets forth bluntly and clearly the premises of Zionism. They had indeed been laid out in the diaries of Theodor Herzl and in the political writings of Chaim Weizmann, if not as eloquently as the declaration of Jabotinsky, known as The Iron Wall. There can be no discussion of reconciliation between us and Palestinian Arabs, not now, not in the future. All well-meaning people, with the exception of those blind from birth, have understood long ago the complete and utter impossibility at arriving at agreements with the Arabs of Palestine for the transformation of Palestine from an Arab country to a country under utter control of Jews. Each of you has some general understanding of the history of colonization. Try to find even one example when the colonization of a country takes place with the agreement of the native population. Such an event has never occurred. The natives will always struggle obstinately against colonists, and it is all the same whether they are cultured or uncultured. The comrades in arms of Hernan Cortes and Francisco Pizarro conducted themselves like brigands. The Redskins fought with uncompromising fervor against both evil and so-called good-hearted colonizers. The natives will struggle against any form, any kind of colonization, anywhere and at any time, because it is inadmissible to them. Any native people views their country as their national home, of which they will be masters, and they will never voluntarily allow a new master who drives them out So it is for the Arabs. Compromisers among us try to convince us that Palestinians are some kind of fools who can be tricked with hidden formulations of our basic goals. I flatly refuse to accede to this view of the Palestinian Arabs. They have the precise psychology that any oppressed people has. They look upon Palestine with the same instinctive love and true fervor that any Aztec look upon his Mexico or any Sioux upon his prairie. This people will struggle against colonizers until the last spark of hope that they can avoid the dangers of conquest and colonization is extinguished. Yes, the Palestinians will struggle in this way until we have removed the last spark of hope. It matters not what words we use to explain our colonization. Colonization has an integral, inescapable meaning. It is understood by every Jew and by every Arab. We have but one goal. It is in the nature of things. We shall carry on this colonization against the will of the Palestinian Arabs. That condition exists now. It will subsist in the future, and we will never relinquish it. And even an agreement with non-Palestinians represents the same kind of fantasy. For in order for genuine Arab nationalists of Baghdad and Mecca and Damascus to agree to pay so serious a price, they would have to abandon the Arab character of Palestine. For we shall not give compensation for Palestine neither to Palestinians or to other Arabs. A voluntary agreement is inconceivable. Let us be clear about that. Even the most restricted colonization would only be possible in defiance of the will of the native populace. Ours will continue to develop only under a shield of force, which comprises an iron wall through which this people will never break through. This is our Arab policy. To formulate it any other way is hypocrisy. Whether through the Balfour Declaration or the mandate, external force is the necessity for establishing in this country conditions of rule through which this people, regardless of its wishes, will be deprived of all possible physical and administrative means of impeding us. Force, relentless force, will play its role without indulgence. And in this, let us be clear, there is no meaningful difference between our militarists and our vegetarians. One prefers an iron wall of Jewish bayonets, the other an iron wall of English bayonets. And to the hackneyed reproach that this point of view is unethical, we say untrue. This is our ethic. There is no other ethic. As long as there remains the faintest spark of hope for Palestinians to impede us, they will not sell these hopes, not for any sweet words nor for any tasty moral, because this is not a rabble, but a people, a living people. And no people makes such enormous concessions on such fateful questions of existence, except when there is no hope left, until we have removed any remnant, every opening visible in the iron wall.
You are listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen over WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, and on the internet at www.wbai.org. You've been listening to the very beginning of this three-hour provocative, stimulating, and moving CD set, three CDs, The Hidden History of Zionism and The Roadmap as a Dead End for the Palestinian People. For a $100 contribution to WBAI, you will have this gift premium sent to you. 212-209-2950. The Taking Aim audience are brothers and sisters who are with us every week. You are the bulwark of WBAI's fund drives each and every time. And that's why we are bringing you this very special premium. We know you will appreciate it. We know you're going to want to have a copy for your friends, your family, and your colleagues. It's very different from any other of the premiums on the subject that we've done before. This includes not only the analysis of Zionism, the revelations about it, and the impact on the Palestinian people today. There is a third CD, which is a discussion period. where many of the questions from the audience were answered in great detail by Ralph. $100 contribution, 212-209-2950. Your MasterCard, your Visa, your debit card allow you to make time-staged contributions, or a check or money order to WBAI is appreciated. Keep the people in the pledge room very busy, 212-209-2950. If you're listening on the Internet, this is the moment to make that long-distance call to 212-209-2950. As in appreciation of the fact that we know you're going to keep these lines full and moving along, we're going to use and we're going to devote most of this hour to actually playing the from the first CD and the third CD. So that means that while you're listening, we want you to dial 212-209-2950. As long as you keep the phones ringing off the hook, we'll keep playing from this further excerpts from the program. Ralph?
Yes, the Hidden History of Zionism is a setting forth of the data and the political underpinnings of the record of persecution of the Palestinian people, and indeed it is as well a documentation of the little-known collaboration of the Zionist movement itself with the anti-Semites. Zionism's perfidy, betrayal of the victims of the Holocaust, was the culmination of their attempt to identify the interests of the Jews with those of the established order. And this sordid history is rooted in the demoralization of the founders of Zionism, who rejected the possibility of overcoming anti-Semitism through popular struggle and social revolution. In reality, Moses Hess, Theodor Herzl, and Chaim Weizmann chose the wrong side of the barricades, that of state power, class domination, and exploitative rule. They understood that the cultivation of anti-Semitism and the persecution of the Jews were the work of the very ruling class from whom they curried favor.
There is extensive documentation on the first CD. Some of you may have heard it earlier when we played part of that excerpt earlier in the three-hour special that we're having for Taking Aim today. We now want to go on to a later part, the end of the first CD, new material that we haven't played today, that deals with the seizure of the land, the colonization of and the colonization of Palestine, the dispossession of the Palestinian people. 212-209-2950. Your contribution, $100 contribution to WBAI in appreciation of Taking Aim and the programs that you hear with Ralph and myself every week. Michael, can we go back to the CD?
Between 1948 and 1953, 370 Jewish towns and settlements were established. 350 were on so-called absentee property. By 1954, 45% of Israel's Jews lived on property confiscated from absentees. 250,000 new immigrants settled in urban areas from which Palestinians had been expelled through massacre. Entire cities had been emptied of their population. Jaffa, Acre, Lydda, Ramla, Bisan, Majdal. The plunder embraced 385 towns and villages in their entireties and large sections of 94 other cities and towns, containing 35% of all buildings in Israel. 10,000 business and retail stores were handed over to settlers. From 1948 to 1953, the period of greatest immigration, the economic importance to Israel of seized Arab property was decisive. The amount of cultivatable land seized from Palestinians driven from the country by massacre was 3.5 times the total area of the land granted the Zionists with the end of the mandate. All citrus groves of Palestine were seized. 450,000 dunams. By 1951, 2.5 million boxes of citrus from seized Arab groves were in Israeli hands, 20% of the country's hard currency profits. By 1952, 95% of Israel's olive groves from seized Palestinian lands. Olive produce from stolen Palestinian groves represented the third largest export after citrus and diamonds. One-third of all stone production from 52 seized Palestinian quarries. Now, you know the mythology. Zionist industry, Zionist dedication, Zionist skill transformed an otherwise barren desert neglected by its primitive nomadic Arab inhabitants only recently descended from the trees. They made the desert bloom. Yes. Palestinian orchards, Palestinian industry, Palestinian rolling stock factories, houses and possessions pillared after slaughtering conquest. Because this ship of state is a vessel of pirates, and its proper flag is a skull and crossbones. The Israeli state is a state based on plunder, based on dispossession, based on ethnic cleansing, based upon massacre. It is predicated upon laws that deny the Palestinians the right to subsist, to work, to live, to utilize the land. They are a people perpetually under siege. They are marked for expulsion. They are marked for removal from one end of Palestine to the next. Some 70 years ago, an orator responded not to the occupation of his country or the liquidation of three-fourths of its towns and villages. He was not reacting to massacre and mass imprisonment and detention camps and torture. He did not decry the systematic seizure of the land and property of an entire people in their overnight transformation into pauperized refugees, existing in tent camps, hunted and persecuted wherever they fled. He did not denounce a 60-year ordeal punctuated by unrelenting bombing and invasion and yet further dispersal. He responded in but a few weeks of sporadic bombing as he declaimed memorably, "I have nothing to offer you but blood, tears, and sweat. You ask, what is our policy? I say it is to wage war by sea, by land, and air, with all our might and with all the strength that God can give us to wage war against a monstrous tyranny never surpassed in the dark, lamentable catalog of human crime. That is our policy. You ask, what is our aim? I say in one word, victory. Victory at all costs. Victory in spite of all terror. Victory, however long and hard the road may be. For without victory for us, there is no survival. Let that be realized. No survival. I feel sure that our cause will not be subject to failure, and I feel entitled to claim the aid of all." And a week later, he declared, "We shall defend this place, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We'll fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields. We shall fight in the streets. We shall fight house to house. We will fight in the hills to which we retreat. We shall never surrender. And even if, which I do not for a moment believe, this island is subjugated and starving, we shall yet carry on the struggle." Now, what is it that makes it possible for the leader of the Raj, the Imperial Raj, Winston Churchill, to utter these sentiments, but renders them illicit for the Palestinian people? Only that inveterate racism, that imperial consciousness that denies to a victim people, the world's soldiers for justice, the right to defend their survival, to defend their existence, to fight for their land, to fight for their self-determination, to fight for their survival. The Palestinian people are engaged in a struggle which is at the center of the resistance to imperialism. They are linked inextricably to the struggle of the oppressed masses of the Arab East. As the great Palestinian poet Hassan Kanafani, assassinated by the assassination squads of the Zionists, as have been so many of the Palestinian leaders over the decades, Hassan said, "The path to the liberation of Palestine passes through Mecca and Riyadh and Baghdad and Damascus and Kuwait and Cairo and Alexandria." Yes, the struggle of the Palestinian people is a struggle for the liberation of an oppressed populace, of an oppressed region. For Zionism is but the continued instrument of a colonial presence and imperial presence that we see unfolding before our eyes in Iraq and targeting Iran and targeting Syria and targeting but 80 more countries. It is a struggle that speaks to all of us, and we cannot deny to the Palestinian people that elementary right to resist that we reserve for ourselves, because our own oppression and the subjugation that our rulers would impose upon us is in tandem with their visiting upon the people of Palestine and the Arab East their imperial designs, of which the Zionist colonial state is but a locus operandus, the means of enforcement, the inexorable reflection of capitalism and imperialism and of a ruling class in our lives. And that is our obligation and our struggle to speak truth to power and to stand with the Palestinian people in their resistance and their struggle for survival.
You've been listening to the eloquence of Ralph Schoenman in the presentation at the College of Marin in the San Francisco Bay Area of The Hidden History of Zionism and The Roadmap as a Dead End for the Palestinian People. 212-209-2950 for your $100 contribution. The three-hour, three-CD, fully tracked set is available as a gift from WBAI and Ralph and myself of Taking Aim to You. If you are listening on the Internet at www.wbai.org, please call 212-209-2950. Again, your MasterCard, your Visa, your debit card, or your check or money order are accepted. 212-209-2950. There are three parts. The first is the exposition by Ralph, The Hidden History of Zionism. The second CD is a discussion by me of The Roadmap as a Dead End for the Palestinian People, complete description of the barrier wall, the impact on the Palestinian people, the plans for the transfer, the destruction of the infrastructure within the West Bank and Gaza, the elimination of the Palestinians as a people themselves. The third part are the responses to the many questions that came from the audience, questions that you yourself have asked over the many months that we have been discussing the issues of the Palestinian struggle. Now, if you want to reach us at you can contact us at Taking Aim at PacBell, that's PACBELL.net, and we do respond to your questions. But right now it's time for you to get on the phone and get your copy of this riveting, moving, and stimulating you to action 3-hour, 3-CD set, 212-209-2950. As we promised, we're going to go to an excerpt of the question and answer period. We know you're going to keep these phones off the hook. Remember, the taking WBAI depends upon you, our brothers and sisters, the Taking Aim audience, your loyalty to both WBAI and particularly to us in Taking Aim, and to the exciting, the innovative, provocative, stimulating, and meticulous documentation that we provide each week is only possible with the funds that each of us provide to keep WBAI on the air. 212-209-2950, The Hidden History of Zionism and The Roadmap as a Dead End for the Palestinian People. Ralph, do you have a word before we go to the question and answer period?
Keep the struggle going. Keep supporting WBAI. Please show your support for Taking Aim and for our efforts to defend the rights of the people of Palestine.
Well, I would say to you this. A call for an end to aid to apartheid Israel is an important demand that the Palestinian solidarity movement should certainly undertake. I think, however, that a necessary component of the building of a movement in support of the people of Palestine is to have a clear understanding of the nature of Zionism and of the Israeli state, because unless we can equip ourselves with the historical record and knowledge of what the character and nature of this state is. You cannot go out and do political battle with the many who have goodwill but who don't have a clear understanding of this history and who are ready to embrace the notions of a peace process, which is in fact a process of pacification and of liquidation, a preparation for the next series of massacres and transfers. So we need to equip ourselves with an understanding of the real nature of the Zionist state, and we have to be willing and ready to characterize it no less than we did the apartheid state of South Africa. With respect to Nelson Mandela, let me say this to you. You can integrate the beaches of Durban, but as long as Harry Oppenheimer owns the mines, black workers are going to live in Soweto on 14 cents a day. There is almost 55% unemployment today in South Africa. The land remains in the hands of the settlers, and the commanding heights of the economy are right where they were under apartheid. As Malcolm used to say, it's not about a black face in a high place. It's about dispossessing the oppressor. It's about allowing the oppressed to have command over their land, over their resources, over the fruits of their labor. So the struggle in South Africa, the forms of independence, it's the tragedy of the national bourgeoisie, that they are incapable of winning the elementary democratic content of the anti-colonial revolution unless they move on to dispossess the colonial master, the imperial controllers of the economy. And as even the police and army apparatus in South Africa, it has a veneer of a couple of black commanders, and the whole murder apparatus is in place. They use it to strike break. They use it to keep down the trade union movement in South Africa. So we have to understand that the content of liberation is very precise about who controls, who owns. It's not just the trappings of office. You know, the existence of a Colin Powell or a Condoleezza Rice is of vanishing little utility to the working class inhabitants of Harlem that has a higher rate of infant mortality than in Bangladesh. As in South Africa, so in Palestine, and indeed in the United States. It's a question of program. It's a question of purpose. It's a question of political organization.
You've been listening to an excerpt from the question and answer period of The Hidden History of Zionism and the Roadmap as a Dead End for the Palestinian People. Our contribution to you for your donation to WBAI of $100 for a 3-hour, 3-CD set, 212-209-2950. As you can tell from this little tidbit of the one-hour discussion period, there is extensive discussion of the way forward for the Palestinian and the anti-Zionist Palestinian people and the anti-Zionist Jews and those of us here in the United States and throughout Europe and the rest of the world who are in solidarity with the Palestinian people, who see the struggle of the Palestinians as inextricably linked to our own struggles in our respective countries. Ralph.
Well, in this discussion, we outlined the the necessity for a revolutionary Palestinian leadership to devise a program not just inside and outside the Green Line, but one which addresses the Jews within Israel as well as Muslims and Christians. In short, a blueprint for a post-Zionist society which inspires people and associates the inequities of their lives with the Zionist state. For the Zionist state is at once a species of capitalist class rule and an extension of U.S. imperial power in the region. And hence the struggle against Zionism becomes, programmatically, a struggle for a socialist Palestine, and as the dawn follows the long night, a struggle for a socialist Arab East from the Mediterranean to the Gulf. That is the programmatic delineation of a way forward. There is no shortcut to this. The Palestinian revolutionary movement can only advance by hammering out a new strategy based on combining the Palestinian national struggle with the struggle of the workers and peasants of the whole Middle East for liberation from both capitalist and imperialist domination in short, for a socialist Middle East. There is no shortcut to liberation. The century-old ordeal of the Palestinian people has demonstrated this. The road for victory will only be shortened when a leadership arises which knows its direction and proposes the path in a language which enlists the people, mobilizes them in their own behalf, and exposes fearlessly the false leaders dangerously in the way.
212-209-2950. $100 for your three-hour CD set. There are other contributions, such as the membership to WBAI, that you can that the people in the tally room will let you, you know, you can discuss with them. But please call. These are the closing minutes for your contribution in support of Taking AIM and WBAI. This is the only week of the Summer Fun Drive, remember, and this is your only opportunity to have this three CD set to share with your friends, your family, your colleagues. You know that they're going to want to listen to this. They're riveted. And as I said, listening to Ralph, while I was in the audience, I was moved to tears, as many of the people at the College of Marin were. We were moved to tears. We were angry. We were ready to go out and do all our and intensify our organizing efforts. This is what happens with the powerful presentation and the meticulous and extensive documentation. Please, 212-209-2950. We really want to thank all our brothers and sisters who've been listening to Taking AIM for the almost 2 years that we've been on the air. We also want to thank Brad Wiedmeyer, who assists us here in California, and Mark Bilk and Pamela Summers, who've been maintaining our website so that you can have an archive, and Michael G. and Matthew Finch, and also the engineers at KPFA who assist. As you know, we do an ISDN line transfer each week. We're in California, and we are right there with you in New York, and that's because of your donations, your contributions to support your station, WBAI.
And to all of those who have been our colleagues, our friends, our comrades, our co-workers in this effort to elucidate the nature of imperial rule, John Puterback, Michael Berenzweig, Michael Smith, and Debbie Smith, our many supporters, our many listeners, our many educators who teach us as they collaborate with us in this work.
And who also each week send us emails with information that you have found and that you want to share with us and through us with the WBAI listenership. Taking AIM is a collective program, a collective effort. 212-209-2950. We want to thank all of you who have contributed today. Michael G. May have some names he can read off, and we again want to remind you to call 212-209-2950. Ralph, last
Well, just to remind people that the Palestinian answer to Zionist imperial schemes have from their inception been found in the stone-throwing children of Jabilia, the beach camp of Balata and Deheshi. For this, as Vladimir Jabotinsky was obliged by them to acknowledge, is a people, a living people, not a rabble, but a conscious people fighting with stones and slingshots against the fourth largest military power in the world. And we owe them, at the very least, fidelity to their revolutionary struggle, for this struggle can never be complete until it extends from the Mediterranean to the Persian Gulf, from the Brook of Egypt, to paraphrase Theodor Herzl, from the Brook of Egypt to the Euphrates, and as their Zionist oppressors forever proclaim, and beyond, brothers and sisters. Support this programming. Support the people of Palestine. Support Taking AIM. Support Free Speech Radio and WBA.
212-209-2950. Michael?
Yes, thank you very much, Ralph and Maya, for the extraordinary effort, the extraordinary presentation given here this afternoon, the Hidden History of Zionism with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen.
Michael, I forgot one thing I'd like to mention. If you want to contact us,
please go ahead.
Reach us at takingaim@pacbell.net. That's PACBELL.net. And also go to our internet site, www.takingaim.info. And, of course, you can find access to us on the WBAI website, www.wbai.org. Michael.
That's taking aim... .info, is it? Yes.
Okay. We're one of the info pioneers.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much.
Thanks for all your support and help, Michael, as ever.
You're very welcome, Ralph, and you're very welcome, Maya. It's 5:56 in New York City. You're tuned to 99.5 FM, listener-supported, commercial-free community radio. I have